Looking out for John and Jane Q. Public. This is Forward Forum with John Quinlan on Madison's Progressive Talk, The Mic 92.1.
And welcome to Forward Forum and Adventures in Broadcasting. We're here broadcasting live from the Madison Senior Center, a very special event. It's also Madison School Board Candidates Forum. And we're delighted to have all four candidates for the two seats that are available coming up on April 4th. For seat one, Maya Cole and Arlene Silvera. And for seat two, Lucy Mathiak and Juan Jose Lopez. And welcome to all four candidates. Glad to have you here in Forward Forum.
Good morning.
Thanks for showing up on a Saturday morning.
Thank you.
And here with my co-host, Laura Goodconnect. Laura, good morning.
Good morning, John.
And we have in the beginnings of a studio audience that we hope we're glad to have you all here, and we hope this will build as we go on, and we hope to keep this whole morning a very interactive discussion about the events that affect students in the schools. And this morning we want to focus especially on the issues that affect students in and families in Madison's various minority communities. And so while we'll be asking general questions, we also want to very much kind of keep that frame in mind as we go through the morning. We've had a chance to talk to the candidates a little bit and also tell you, I guess, in some of the ways that this might be a little bit different than some of the other forums that you're a part of. Because it is a broadcast, we want to keep things kind of conversational, interesting as much as we can. We're going to ask you to just be conscious as much as you can. Laura will help as a timekeeper in some informal sense, but try to keep answers down to a couple minutes or so. And we will try to also give you the opportunity from time to time to be more interactive and perhaps to ask questions and clarifications of each other, that kind of thing. Again, the overall goal here is to give voters a chance to see where you stand on the issues and to give you a chance to contrast where your stands lie vis-a-vis your opponent, too. So that's the important goal here. And knowing all four of you, I know that you'll be cooperative and helpful toward that goal, and we're really glad to have you here this morning. A couple of thank yous as we get started. This is an effort that is the result of some important coalition building here in Madison. And two groups that we want to recognize at the outset that help bring this about are Communities United and MAFAC. To begin with MAFAC, it is a group whose mission is to inform, support, and advocate for families and students of African descent in the public schools. Coalition with a dual purpose to assist those families in obtaining the best possible educational experiences and opportunities for their children and to affect systemic anti-racist change in the public school system. And we will be hearing more from members of MAFAC throughout the morning. The other group is a group that I'm especially proud to be a longtime member of, and that's Communities United. And this is a group that, Juan, you can help me here, I guess goes back about 7 or 8 years, is that right?
It's a spinoff of what was formerly called the Black and Brown Roundtable. And then a group of people took it on and started Communities United after Dr. Brown, Santiago Rosas, and myself had started the Black and Brown Roundtable here in Dane County.
And it's a very exciting group. Again, its beginnings with dialogue between Black and Latino community members, and it's since expanded to include Asian American people, American Indians, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community, Jewish community, and all manner of folks who are interested in advancing civil rights in town. And it's a pretty precious resource here. And if folks are interested in this, we'll post more information on the station's website at themic921.com. But for the time being, anyway, and for our next meeting, generally we meet on the second Mondays at noon at Madison Gas and Electric, and that location may be changing, but you can find us there next month. Well, I wanted to start out the morning kind of break from that two-minute rule and just kind of give each of you a chance to introduce yourselves with just an emphasis on some of the backgrounds and experiences that you bring that would serve you well as a school board member, and then specifically why you are running for school board. And we'll try to mix it up as we go along, but in this case, why don't we start on the far left here, and Maya Cole running for seat one. And because this is radio, I think we also emphasize we're going to try to make sure that as everybody speaks, if I neglect to introduce you each time, we'll have you do that as well, so folks are aware of that. And again, we have two different seats coming up. All of these seats are at large, so everyone in the district has a chance to vote for them. In this case, this is a seat that was formerly held by school board member Bill Keyes, and it's an open seat, and Maya Cole and Arlene Silvera are the two candidates, and we'll start with Maya Cole.
Thank you, John, and thanks to the mic for doing this. I think it's very important, and I'm glad that you invited everyone here.
You're welcome. Thanks.
I'm Maya Cole. I have three boys that attend Madison Schools. They're twins that are 6 and a 9-year-old, and I just got them off to different daycare providers so that I could be here. Why am I doing this? Long story short is that I grew up in Florida, and my parents didn't graduate from high school. Education became a very important thing in my life. My parents really emphasized education, and it took me quite a while to figure out how to go through college and high school. And I feel it's very important that some of the things that I've learned as someone who came from that segment of population of the free and reduced lunch, that I take some of the things that I've learned and help advocate for other kids, especially in this district where we're seeing numbers that those kids and kids of color are increasing. I come from a background of science. I have a degree in conservation biology, and I was a zookeeper, which I think helps when you're going to be on a school board.
You want to elaborate on that?
Well, I didn't take care of primates, but I took care of almost everything else. And sometimes a lot of this ends up being a lot of animal behavior going around. But seriously, I've also volunteered in the schools. I have always felt strongly that the teachers that take care of my kids spend more time with my kids than my own family does. And I feel very honored when I can have a relationship with a teacher and that she or he trusts me to go into the classroom and volunteer. So I had a close relationship with a lot of teachers, both preschool and at Franklin. And when I told them that I was going to run for school board, they thought I was kind of crazy. they had seen me volunteering in the classroom. And I think my personality in the classroom is one where it's very child-centered. I'm surrounded by kids right now, and I think that that's something that serves me well when serving on a school board because I have a focus of young kids. I don't work outside of the home. This is my life right now. So, that's about it.
Okay. Again, Maya Cole is a candidate for seat 1, and her opponent in for that seat is Arlene Silvera. Arlene, welcome to Forward Forum.
Thanks, John. Good morning, everyone. Excuse my cold. My name is Arlene Silvera, and I'm running for Madison School Board for seat number 1. I'm a parent, a taxpayer, and a businesswoman in the Madison Metropolitan School District. I've been active in the school for many years. I have a daughter in eighth grade at Cherokee Middle School, and so I've been active since she was in kindergarten, and have done a lot of things which I'd like to share with you. I think this is a campaign about their children and their needs, and I think we have to focus on our children and keep the focus on that in the campaign. Schools play a critical role in that. They provide guidance, education, a chance for children to explore themselves, learn their potential, and learn about themselves in this world. And that's why I think this is very important. I've been an activist in school since my daughter was in kindergarten. I was president of the Leopold Elementary School PFO. I'm currently president of the Cherokee Middle School PTO, both schools that are very diverse, socioeconomically, racially, all the way. So we have a lot of experience working with programs with children of color, low-income children, and the like. I was a steering committee member of Madison Cares, which is the pro-referenda group last May that was supporting the 3 school referenda. And I also represented Cherokee on the West Memorial Demographics Task Force, which was the group that recently got together to deal with the overcrowding and growth issues in the Weston Memorial attendance areas. Business-wise, I have been at Promega Corporation for about 23 years. Right now I'm the director of marketing, and I have a lot of hands-on experience that I think will be very valuable to the board. I do budget planning myself. I do a lot of project management, bringing together diverse groups of people, working toward common goals, facilitation, negotiation, marketing communication background. I think a lot of these are skills that are would be very valuable on the board. If you look at the Madison School District, it has a budget of over $320 million. I think we have to start making good decisions, and I think we have to start looking at data, and we have to start ensuring that we're listening to the people in making those good decisions. I have a science background of molecular biology, a master's degree from the University of Connecticut. The company I work at is a scientific company, and we use scientific principles every day. So we do a lot of data analysis. We do a lot of trend analysis. Again, I think things that will help in the decision-making on the board. I believe in change, and I believe change is necessary. Continual improvement is the way I approach change. And I think that we have a strong foundation in the Madison School District on which we can build. And we have to work together, put programs together that we can continue to build on what is good and ensure that we're addressing the needs of all of our children. Thanks.
Again, for those of you keeping a scorecard at home, where we've referred now from the first two candidates for seat one, Maya Cole and Arlene Silvera, and now we're here from the two candidates for seat two, a seat that's currently held by incumbent Juan Jose Lopez, and we'll hear first from his opponent in this process, Lucy Mathiak. Lucy, good morning.
Good morning, John, and I also apologize. I think it would be fair to say, I don't know about you, Mr. Lopez, but most of us at this table, I have some form of a cold. So if you hear some coughing, it's not disparaging towards our opponents. It's just, this
you,
is
you
sort
know,
of like
a cynic might believe that you're all just doing this to elicit sympathy from the voters. And I, you know,
actually, I just wanted to be clear that I'm not practicing biological warfare.
Very good.
And I have vitamin C, and I share anybody who needs it. I'm a mom, and hence my offer to share my vitamin C. I'm a mom. I have two sons. One is 19, graduated from Madison East in 2004. The other is a junior at East this year. I adore my kids. I think it's mutual. One of my sons is black, one is white, and so I have experienced the school district from very, very, very different perspectives through each of my children and through their friends. For the last several years now, I have a large group of kids who congregate at my dinner table on a regular basis, or now that they're out of high school, the door opens around 9 o'clock at night and in they come. And they're a very diverse group. They include children whose parents are gay and lesbian couples, children who are from Puerto Rican, Chicano, biracial, other heritages that are basically not mainstream Caucasian. I also learned a lot as a parent who accompanied the East High cheerleading team, and this is one of my deep, dark confessions, to the national competitions at Florida and Minnesota, because when you go to those things, if you've ever seen Bring It On, that is, it looks like sort of a Hitler youth rally. It's a lot of white kids with blonde hair and the scrunchies. The East High team was the most diverse team I've ever seen. We had Khmer children. We had Chicano children. We had black and biracial. The white kids were the minority on the East team. And spending time traveling, when you drive kids places, when you spend a week with them in Florida, you learn a lot about their lives and their concerns and their aspirations. And I come out of all of these experiences, my experiences with the larger group of kids that I've come to know and be close with at East, very, very concerned about what we're not talking about in our schools right now. And that has to do with the hopes and aspirations of our children, whether or not we're really meeting them, what messages they get on a daily basis about their future and their success, what they come up against in terms of the ways that we address issues like school safety, discipline, other issues. And, you know, I this is not a personal issue with Mr. Lopez. I like him personally greatly. He's much prettier than I am. If you could, you know, he's much prettier on the radio than I am.
We'll be debating that later on.
but it's about really my feeling a need as a parent and as a citizen to push the envelope and to get some of these issues in full dialogue, to look at some of the ways that we could change things. I'm both a mom and I have 25 years experience at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I work for the largest college, so that most of the kids who come into UW-Madison come in through our college. I'm concerned about whether or not we're preparing kids who are going to be able to stay in. And I don't mean just children of color. I mean all kids, because it is a very, very competitive world out there, not just at Madison, but at the state schools. And we need to be focusing on excellence in ways that we haven't been to date. I know about complex budgets. We've gone through budget cuts as a state institution for the last decade or more. I've gone through the process of saying, what can we keep doing? What do we value? And one of the things that I've been fortunate to do is I have a large cadre of very talented colleagues who work with areas that didn't exist when I came in to UW-Madison in 1972. They work with American Indian Student Services, Chicano Latino Student Services, African American Student Services, Southeast Asian, and so forth. As a group, and it's a fairly large group now, they have come up with some fabulous strategies that we ought to be looking at and talking about mirroring in our schools as ways of acknowledging the ability and the talents and the aspirations of all of our students, not just the ones who have the parents and the vocal advocates. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Again, that was Lucy Mathiak. She's one of the two candidates for seat two, a seat that's currently held by Juan Jose Lopez, who will be speaking next. Welcome, Juan.
Thank you, John, and thank you, Laura, also, because I know Laura pretty well, and I've seen her many times. And, John, I've been with you on the radio before.
That's
right. I got to say something. This is the most I've ever seen of Lucy, because other than that, I see her at Ellis Deli, because that's where I think your son worked or is working. But that's really at Ellis Deli where I've seen her, and we talked quite a few times. I'm originally from San Antonio, and I got to tell you a couple of things, because that will tell you what my values are and how I approach things. Because a lot of times when people run for office, they criticize people, or they're destructive towards people. And that's not my approach, because being brought up in a segregated, poor community in San Antonio as a Chicano male to a mother and a father who grew up poor, we weren't taught to do that. We were taught to lift people up. We were taught to push the envelope. We were taught to challenge people and to challenge ourselves. My mother and father taught me to give back to the community. I never knew what that meant, but that's the way they developed my mind. That's the way they developed my heart. And that's why when I came to Wisconsin and I got involved at the university, and let me tell you, I was just there yesterday because some of the same professionals that my opponent talks about invited me to come to speak because of the leadership and the courage that I've had on the school board. They've used that to bring me in as an expert, as a leader, to help them in navigating the issues that are being faced at the university or at a school system or a vocational technical school system. One of the people that I always looked up to was to my mother and my father. And my father always said, have high expectations for yourself and treat people the way you would want to be treated yourself. I know some of you know that as the golden rule. The golden rule. That's what it is. Again, my father never said this was the golden rule. This is what he taught me. But I have two nieces, and I have five nephews. They don't live here. They live in San Antonio, and they live in Alabama. And those are the people that I talk to now, because recently my mother passed away. And my mother was my mentor. My mother was my guidance. My mother was my star and shining light. But she passed away, and I have to accept that and move on. But it's my nieces and nephews now that I consult with quite a bit. As a matter of fact, they're the ones who picked the color of my signs, because they said, Uncle Juan, you have to be cool. You just can't be boring. And, you know, I tried to do that. Well, when I got on the school board.
Do they think you're pretty? Or no, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Let me tell you, I don't look any prettier than them. That's
okay,
for sure.
Sorry, Juan.
I've never been called pretty, but that's a first. I got on the school board, and I came in as a change agent. I came in as a person challenging the status quo, and I continue to do so because as a minority male, and a Chicano, it's important that young people of all racial backgrounds, of all sexual backgrounds and gender backgrounds do well. When our students do well, then everybody prospers. Everybody prospers. When the school districts in Dane County or in Madison do well, then that city or that town or that village prospers as well, economically, pride, and so forth. What are the things that I focus on, and what will I focus on next? Well, one of the things that I focused on was setting expectations. When I got to the school district, they didn't have expectations. They did not have clear expectations for some of our kids. I, along with other school board members, said we need to look at setting standards for reading, for math, and for attendance. Those weren't even in place when I got there. Those things occurred. When we looked again at the minority student achievement gap, we just didn't talk about process and about planning. We took it head on. We took it head on. And we worked with United Way, with WISC-TV, and the State Journal, and took it on head on. And I'm proud to say that the results, not the speeches, not the literature, not all these other things, the results are clear that the gap has narrowed. But we're not satisfied there. I want to do in this next time is to focus on 5th grade reading, 7th grade reading, 9th grade reading, to make sure that we're retaining the reading levels that our kids need to succeed academically. Now, the other one that we always talk about also is the budget. And everybody, you know, I've been involved with budgets as the director of the Boys and Girls Club. I've been involved with budgets with Briar Patch. I know some of my colleagues are here from other nonprofits where we've gone before the city, the county, United Way, and other agencies. And everybody says, what can you do different with a budget situation? Well, look at the cards that we have. And the university has it, MATC has it, and other nonprofits. We are in a crisis as far as budgets are concerned. But who is the one that it's affecting the most? Children. And I will continue to, when I push the envelope, when I challenge, when I make changes, I will make sure that our budget is focused on children. Now, a lot of times people say, well, Juan, of course the majority of your budget is for personnel. Well, of course it is, because that's the labor-intensive type of issues that we need for our children in the schools. So I will continue to focus in making sure that we provide training, that we have a diverse staff. And let me tell you, if I haven't challenged the status quo, if I haven't pushed the envelope, then I don't know who has. But let me tell you, when I first got on the school board, we had a little over 130 minority employees at the school district. We have over 525 now, over 525. We looked at the process, we looked at what plans of actions to take, and we made those changes. Are we satisfied? Am I happy with everything that we have as far as administrators, as far as clerical, as far as teachers, as far as education assistants? No, but I will continue to be aggressive in making sure that we change that, because people of color, and we're talking about this, people of color are important role models to everybody, not just to minority kids, but to everybody. And I'll focus on the last one that I think is very important, and I know we'll talk about it at the very end, John, that I'm very proud of. Again, I'm a change agent, folks, and I will continue to push that. We were the first school district in America, not in Madison, not in the county, not in the state, to provide domestic partner insurance. And let me tell you why I'm proud of that, because Latinos in this country are the most uninsured and underinsured in this country. So when people blasted me because I took a position to make sure that we provided domestic partner, don't tell me that, because my people are suffering because they don't have insurance. So it was a right, not a privilege. That I'm very proud of. We will challenge that because, again, I want to make sure that we are equitable as far as gender and sexual orientation, equity in the district, to make sure that we continue to provide the position that we have, and it's Bonnie Augusta is her name, who is our gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered support teacher, but making sure that our students are involved in let the students be together with parents and teachers in looking at curriculum and what's best for them. I will focus on that. And the last thing that I'll stop there, John, I know you're going to tell me to stop, is safety. I mean, safety is the biggest issue. And I know one of our principals is here from Lincoln Elementary School. And we know that the safety is an issue. Safety is a very big issue. And let me tell you why that's very important, because if our kids are not safe in the classroom, in the hallway, going home, or getting to school, then they're not going to be ready to learn. I'm going to focus on safety issues. I'm going to continue to support the police officers in our schools, even if as a deterrent and an educational thing, if nothing else. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Again, that was Juan Jose Lopez. He's the incumbent in seat two, one of the two at-large school board seats that are open that people will be voting for here in Madison and in surrounding areas that are part of the Madison Metropolitan School District on April 4th. Juan's opponent is Lucy Mathiak, who you heard from earlier. Now we'll go back to seat one. But before we do, just want to announce for anyone who's just tuning in, again, this is Forward Forum on the Mic 92.1. And you will notice something very different about this hour, and we have the gentleman to my right to thank for this. Brian Terraney is the program director at the mic, and through their generosity, they have agreed for the purposes of the school board forum to present the next a couple of hours through the morning relatively commercial-free. So we thank them for that. And if I could, I'm wearing my community activist hat. Let's thank them. And as we mentioned at the outset, this debate is also co-sponsored by two groups that work for on behalf of civil rights in Madison. One is MAFAC, and that acronym stands for the Madison Area Family Advisory Advocacy Coalition. I want to also in particular thank Barbara Golden for all of her help in bringing about this forum, and also Ernestine Moss, who is here as a chair of Communities United, which is another multi-issue group working on behalf of civil rights in Madison. Well, as we make the transition to, again, the purpose of why we're here, which is in large part to focus in on the issues that affect people in minority communities, students and families in our school district. I'm actually going to give you a little more latitude on this because this is kind of a chance, I think, for you to open up in more general terms about what your commitment is and some of the skills and experiences that you bring to this. But we want to start in a very basic place, and this has been alluded to, that the district has documented a persistent achievement gap between students of color and white students. What essentially do you think are the causes of this, and what would you do as a member of the school board to close the gap? Then off of that, you know, please feel free to ask for reminders of these different things. Again, have any current approaches been successful thus far in your opinion? So again, what do you think the causes are of the achievement gap between students of color and whites? And what would you do as a member to close the gap? How do you critique current efforts? And in this case, let's start with Arlene Silvera, who's candidate for seat one.
Thanks, John. Good morning again. I'm going to take your questions in reverse order.
Sure.
I think the district has been closing the achievement gap, but it certainly is not enough. And I think we have to do a number of things to continue closing the gap until there actually is no gap. Some of the things that have been successful, which was part of John's question, I think is very critical, especially as we go into the budget cycle, in that stage in the small classrooms. The ability for to have the small classrooms, for each child to get more teacher attention, to me is very critical for all students. I think it's very important to continue the community relationships, like the Schools of Hope Project, get those volunteers in the school, more one-on-one attention with children. The summer school programs, I think, have been very, very successful because you see over the summer many low-income children lose learning knowledge and reading knowledge more so than their other counterparts. Those are the types of things that have been working, but it's certainly not enough. What I think is causing the achievement gap, I think there's still institutionalized racism throughout the city, throughout the district. I have a daughter who is Latin American. We went to the UW hospitals on Monday. She had to have some medical tests. I walked in with her, and this woman starts screaming at her in very loud voices because she's assuming she can't speak English, and directs her down this hall to this, you know, the Spanish-speaking place and tells me, I'm assuming you are her translator. You can go with her. Now, this was the UW hospitals. If it's happening there, you know it's happening in the school district. And it's not okay. It made my daughter feel not good and not accepted. And those are the types of things that really bother me. I think we have to continue with the cultural competency training. We have to make sure that the people are training, understand the district, and understand the community. I think we have to continue programs like Schools of Hope. I think we have to continue programs like WICKETY. Right now, 0.9% of African American children are in advanced placement classes. Let's start asking the hard questions. Why is that, and how can we help these children? There are a lot of wonderful programs out there, from the People Program at the university to Project Excel, which helps low-income students in school. Again, things that we have to look at and continue developing. We have to work with organizations like Communities United and MAFAC to get more help and better understanding of what the needs of all of our children are. And we have to work on educating the parents as well. And I think something Juan said that's very important is expectations. I think it's very important that we have high expectations for all of our children. We challenge all of our children to reach their potential, and that's something that is not happening. And again, I think that ties back to some of the racism that you do see in the school. There's a lot of things.
Arlene, I apologize. If you could finish up your point. We're trying to give you all about 3 minutes on this one.
In short,
thank you.
There's a lot of things that can be done, and maybe we can get into more detail throughout the morning.
We certainly will have that opportunity. Again, that was Arlene Silvera. She's one of the two candidates for seat one, which is an open seat. And now we'll hear from the person who is running against her, Maya Cole.
Thank you, John. I think this can be approached from many different ways. I think Arlene did a fairly good job of pointing out what is going right, but I tend to be a process person and not part of the status quo. And so I'm just going to kind of explain where I would come from as someone when I'm talking about, when I talk about change. One is that we have this dichotomy that's split up in the district that I hear frequently when I go out to neighborhoods, which is that, well, we have to deal with the low-income kids and all those kids with special needs, and then we have these kids that are talented and gifted, and that they're on these two different spectrums. And what I've found by talking to parents is that, one, there are many parents in the district that don't feel like their voices are being recognized, specifically in talented and gifted, and also parents of kids of color. And this plays out because when you look at the statistics, you find that a lot of our kids that are dropping out in high school actually tested fairly high and were considered talented and gifted in their scores like grade 5 math. And so what I'm trying to do is set up a process so that we don't keep pinning each other against ourselves and really face these issues. And so one example of this recently that occurred was that we had Fund 80 had some extra money put in it. It wasn't actually put in. It was money that was left over, and folks wanted to spend it on the board. And, I could go into later whether we should spend it or not, but the process was such that one person decided basically which programs would be funded. And that was brought to the board, and the board voted on it. And the programs are wonderful. They're great. They're going to serve kids. But let's look at what happens when you have that process and you do things the way you've always done them. What happened is that the group MAFAC did not get an opportunity to weigh in on that. They didn't get the opportunity to present their ideas to the board, and I would argue many more.
Finish up your thoughts.
Sure.
Thank you.
Another part of the process that I would like to see changed is things like equity task force and expectations. We do have an equity task force, but I question it whether why we aren't including more people in the community than just, one or two representatives. When you look at other school districts, they typically include a lot more people, a lot more professionals, a lot more educators. And I want to see that process continue. I think that's how you push the envelope, is by trusting the community and involving more people.
Okay. and actually in part wanted to alert you to the fact that you're anticipating our next question, which is the involvement of community-based groups. And so we'll have a chance for you to address that more in just a moment. But again, we've now heard from Arlene Silvera and Maya Cole, who are the candidates from seat one. Let me start this time, if I could, in seat two with Juan. Did you get the gist of the question? Or?
Can you repeat it again for me, Jen? I'm sorry. I was listening to Arlene and to Maya. So.
Sure. Essentially, you know, just we're remarking about the fact that the district has documented a persistent achievement gap between students of color and white students. And what we'd like you to address is what you think are the causes, and then what would you do, continue to do as a school board member to close that gap, and have any of the current approaches been successful thus far?
Well, I agree with Arlene on the thing of institutional racism. It exists in every institution that we have here in Madison and in Dane County and in Wisconsin and throughout the country. We know that, and it exists in Madison, Wisconsin, and in our Madison public schools. But, again, we have pushed the envelope and worked, as I mentioned earlier, with the Schools of Hope. The reading is very critical. Study after study from the University of Wisconsin to other institutions throughout this country, if you have higher reading expectations and levels of all kids, the success rate goes up dramatically. I mean, dramatically. And we've attacked that directly with the Schools of Hope through United Way, again, WISC-TV, and also Channel 3. Now, looking at that, what was important was also lowering class sizes. With the SAGE program, we were able to do that to K-2. We need to improve that or increase it to K-5. But the smaller class sizes gives the teacher the ability to be able to engage the student and to be able to utilize some of the methodologies and some of the strategies on making sure that they engage kids. Very, very important. The other one that's also very critical is the teacher training that we provide for our teachers. And I'm talking about cultural competency. I'm also talking about teaching styles, and I'm talking about learning styles. The compatibility between learning style and teaching styles is extremely critical. I mean, extremely critical. And we're working on that, and we've been very successful in making gains, but we're not where we need to be yet. But we're seeing more and more teachers that are getting trained and training other teachers to do so. The other one is a community component. Again, we only have children in our schools 19% of the time. The other 81% of the time, they're in the community, they're at home, they're at church, they're at the synagogue, they're in the neighborhood. Well, our partnerships through Fund 80, which has been criticized severely, I mean severely, directly affects kids of color. It directly affects kids of color. And let me tell you, the partnerships that we have in narrowing that achievement gap is that I want to focus on making sure that our kids, when they're in the community, when they're at the Boys and Girls Club, when they're at the Urban League, when they're at Centro Hispano, when they're at United Refugee Services, when they're with the African American Ethnic Academy, they're getting additional support and additional kinds of support mechanisms so that the kids can succeed when they come back to school. And to work in partnership between our teachers and our community organizations like the Urban League and Centro Hispano, that's an excellent program. I mean, they are serving over 1,000 kids in math tutorial programs, math, and with over 350 tutors that we're training, that we're directing one-on-one to narrow that gap. We currently engage with WICKETY. We'll be more than happy to engage with MAFAC or any other organization that's out there because we understand that the kids are not with us 100% of the time. I will focus on that as well. And again, on another one that I mentioned, and I'll stop there, is the recruitment and retention of minority teachers and minority staff. It's critical, folks. It's not the cure-all and end-all, but it's critical. The University of Wisconsin's struggling with that. MATC is too, but so is Madison. But we're doing things to change that.
Again, that was Juan Lopez, the incumbent in C2. We'll hear now from the person who's running against him in C2, Lucy Mathiak.
Well, thank you for asking about this question. It's one of the things that I wrote about quite extensively in my MTI questionnaire, which is online and available for anybody to read. As I see it, there are two issues. One is the achievement gap, and the other is the critical neglect of our high-ability students of color. They're both pieces of a larger puzzle of our school culture and our school expectations, which must be addressed. And I think the leadership starts with the board, and it starts with a board that can, in the same session, have Barbara Golden come and talk about achievement expectations and the equity formula for students of color, and other people come and talk about the issue of live animals in the classroom and make a choice to focus much more on the live animals in the classroom than it has on student achievement for minority students of color. We have made progress, but in fact, if you look at the math scores, and I apologize to anybody who can't see this on their radio, this is where we were in 1987. These are the math scores, as percentages of students scoring at proficient or advanced on the eighth grade math test. And as you can see, the green one is the Caucasian students. They're way above everybody else. The yellow is all. They're slightly lower. The African-American students are way down at the bottom. Now, that's, you know, it's a gap. They're, and the Latino students are here and the Asian students are here. That is a gap. Now, they redid the tests about 3 years ago so that the tests are actually scoring higher, but it's not clear that they're harder. In fact, they may be somewhat easier. Well, these are the 2004 scores, and as you can see, the Caucasian students are up. All the students are up if you average them. But again, there is a significant gap, and as long as 39% of African-American students score at the advanced or proficient level at eighth grade, that's not acceptable to me. Because I think we can do better. I think we've got the teachers and the talent and the ability to really work with our kids, but that starts with changing the school culture. It means looking at the equity formula that's supposed to be allocating resources to schools according to low income and other needs, and that's something that the current board has abandoned. It means attending things. And Juan, you say you haven't seen me. I have to say I've been at something like 30 board meetings in 1 year alone. So, you know, if you didn't see me, I don't know where you were, but I was there. The forums on disproportionate minority confinement, where people raise some critical issues about what happens when students are in the system and then re-enter the schools. Critical issues from students about profiling and what their counselors are telling them. We need to start listening, we need to start addressing, and we need to start acting on what our parents and our communities are telling us about their children's experience in the schools so that the children are in environments where they feel they can succeed, and that means feeling safe, accepted, and above all, valued.
Okay, again, that was Lucy Mathiak. She's one of two candidates in C2. She's...
May I just ask,
please.
Are those charts available somewhere online that people could look at them?
They can be, sure.
Okay,
maybe we can talk about that later.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay. Yeah, and in general throughout the morning, if there are other resources that you want to make available, and we'll also be sure to get a link up to the various websites off of our website so people can check out those resources. Again, you're listening to Forward Forum, a very special broadcast presented with limited commercial interruption. We are covering a forum and moderating a forum of the candidates for Madison School Board in the April 4th election. In our second hour, we'll give you all a chance in the audience perhaps to ask some questions. Laura's got a wireless mic, and we can wander a little bit and get some other things. Just want to perhaps this may be the question that will finish off the hour, although at this point I'm going to try to ask you to maybe get questions down to say about a minute and a half or 2 minutes so we can cover some of the territory. And I think the thing I didn't mention here, too, is that these questions were formulated in meetings of Community United and MAFAC and other people from Madison's ethnic minority and civil rights communities. So that's where we're drawing these from. But this is an extension off of that last question. And what role do you see community-based groups playing in the achievement of the district's goals, and specifically those having to do with the achievement of students of color? And just to add off to this, I think this may be an opportunity for you. Also, again, just to kind of critique the status quo, do you feel that the school board in some ways could do a better job of communicating with the public, both through community groups, one-on-one, and in other ways? In this case, let's start with Lucy Mathiak, candidate for C2.
I think that, you know, I've been involved in many parent groups, including the East High Booster Club and East High United, and I think it's a mixed bag. I think that you need to talk to the community and find take their pulse on who answers their emails, who does not, who shows up for events, who does not. And it's more than just showing up to be there, but it's also participating and doing the grunt work to make things happen. And I think that we could have much better relations, starting with some of the frustration I've heard from parents on just attempts to partner with the district when they've come up with resources to build playgrounds, or in the East High case, to revamp a baseball diamond, and not having cooperation or having things delayed so that the costs go way up. And I think that's a huge, huge issue. In fall 2004, a number of people from our child care community came together, I think also with, I think, people from the Northside Planning Council, I may be wrong, to talk about how to institute and implement early childhood education, four-year-old kindergarten. They approached the Performance and Achievement Committee, came forward with several proposals, and had a number of people come to testify, and it just went nowhere. I think that was a good faith effort that really deserved a little bit better attention, because it, in fact, affects minority student achievement and the achievement gap. Similarly, I think that we have a problem when people like Barbara Golden are held up as people that the school district is not supposed to work with. There are parents who are out there advocating. You know, it's not the big grand gesture. It's the little day-to-day things that that make it possible for children to succeed. And there are barriers that we shouldn't have. And the final thing I would say, because I know my time is coming to an end, but hopefully not on this earth. It seems to me that in the entire debate about low enrollment on the East Side, there were some opportunities to say, you know, when we have low enrollment in our schools, what would be the possibility of creating satellite programs for some of our community organizations that would give them office space or parent meeting space inside buildings with low school enrollments? I think that would be a creative way of creating stronger partnerships, stronger community engagement that would be win-win for everybody. Right. Thank you.
And again, while I'm going to try to mix the order up, I will try to keep the two seats to separate, so we have a sense of what people on both sides are in each race are saying. So in this case, we'll go to Juan Jose Lopez, who's the other candidate, along with Lucy Mathiak for C2.
Let me make it clear, and Lucy, I got to be sure you're clear on this. No one on the school board has ever told the administration not to work with Barbara Golden. As a matter of fact, we've welcomed her, we've worked with her, and that's totally false. So please don't mislead the public from that perspective. It may be a perception, but that's not true. Now let's look at the partnerships that we have worked with the Urban League, with Centro Hispano, with the African American Ethnic Academy, with Wickedy now. Johnny Winston Jr. went ahead and took, in my opinion, went ahead and took it on directly. Now, some board members supported it, others did not. The partnerships that we have, any board member can be approached by somebody, or they can approach somebody themselves and say, let's develop a partnership. One of the things that we looked at was after-school programming and working with the YMCA. I'm a member of the YMCA. But I know that at the YMCA, even though I love going there, they do not serve low-income or kids of color there as much as I would want to. But we still came together between MSCR, the YMCA, and we put a committee and a task force together, and we came up with resolution on how to work together and how to be able to do the Safe Haven program, which are after-school programs. Those are for poor kids, not middle-income kids, not well-to-do kids, but low-income kids. And we had and developed a very good relationship with between MSCR and the YMCA. We looked again at other community centers. We worked very, very, very closely with Wexford Ridge, with Paul Terranova, to make sure that we provided space, land for them to build a community center right by between Jefferson and Memorial High School. Again, another way of reaching out and working with community organizations. We work with the Atwood Community Center. We work with the East Madison Community Center. We work very closely with the Boys and Girls Club. We work very closely with the Urban League, with Centro Hispano, a number of different agencies. Can we work with others? Yes, but let me tell you again, we are not the wherewithal for everybody. We can't. We don't have all the resources, but we can work together because we have experts on our side, but we also have experts with these different community centers.
I do need to stop you there so we can fit the other two candidates. Thank you very much. That's all right. Maya Cole, seat one.
Well, first I think I'll just relay some experiences I've had. My kids went to Randall this year. And as a community communications chair of the PTO, we decided that we would institute room parents Because Juan's right, we do have many resources in the community, and one specific resource I don't think we utilize enough are the parents. This race is really about two things. One, it's about, are you happy with the current school board, and do you want to continue with the current status quo? And two is, are you cognizant as a voter that we are turning into an urban school district? One thing I focused on in my campaign is looking at how other districts outside of Wisconsin deal with these issues. And I think it's informative. It's the kind of leader I am. I'm someone who shares power, who doesn't think that we can gloss this over. This position is about policy and governance. It's not about nice talk about how I care about kids. I want to see results. I'm a parent. I have three kids. I'm dedicated to these schools for many years.
I apologize. We will make this up to you, but I want to make sure we fit Arlene in because we're coming up to the end of the hour.
Okay.
So I will give you another chance, Arlene.
Sure. Thanks again, John. Communication is poor between the district and the public. I think that is one area that needs a lot of improvement. And actually, I had a chance earlier to talk about some things that I would work on the school board. Communication would be number one. I think there's a heck of a lot of information out there on the website. I think it's available to parents who know how to surf the website and have access to websites. Other than that, I think that communication breakdown. We have to, as a school district, we have to, as a board, ensure that we're doing a better job communicating with all of our parents and all of the public, especially the groups of people that may not have English as their primary language, may not have access to a computer in their family room. We need to get out there and do better interaction of explaining what the schools are all about and listening to their feedback. And I think that's where the community organizations play a very critical role, because as partners with a number of the different community organizations, we can, as a school, better understand the needs of all of our children, and we can work with these organizations to develop the programs in the community that will help the children, that are going to help the parents, that are going to help the teachers. I mean, there are a lot of successful programs. I could, go on and on. I'm more familiar with the African American Ethnic Academy because it takes place at the place I work every summer, and it's really cool to see these kids come in and get excited about science. It's a great opportunity for them to learn the areas of how to explore and ask questions, and they love it. It's a community organization. It works. And I think we have to do a better job at expanding those and making sure we're hearing the voice of everyone.
Okay. And again, thanks everyone for your patience with putting up with these time constraints and everything. Again, you're listening to a very special broadcast of Forward Forum, school board candidate forum. And all four candidates are here: Maya Cole, Arlene Silvera for seat one, Lucy Mathiak, and Juan Jose Lopez for seat two. This is for the April 4th election. Coming up in our 10 o'clock hour, we'll give studio audience members a chance to join in. We welcome the opportunity for all of you to come on down here to the Madison Senior Center at 330 West Mifflin. We'll be broadcasting throughout the morning on these issues. So please come on down and join us. We're up in the second floor conference room. This is John Quinlan for Forward Forum. And hey, sure, we welcome your applause. Thanks to the candidates. Thanks to the station. Thanks for everybody for joining us. And again, we will be back. We'll be broadcasting throughout the morning. Come on down, Madison Senior Center, 330 West.
Inclusion, diversity, progressive values. This is Forward Forum on Madison's Progressive Talk. The mic, 92.1.
And welcome back to Forward Forum. This is John Quinlan. Joined by my co-host, Laura Goodconnect. Laura, good morning.
Good morning, John. It's kind of an exciting kind of a buzz going on here.
That's right. And it's one of the several times now that we've had a chance to have not a studio audience, but a remote audience here at the Madison Senior Center. Again, to remind anybody who's tuning in late, what we're doing here is having a chance to talk to the four candidates who are running on the April 4th election for Madison School Board. They are Maya Cole and Arlene Silvera in seat one, Lucy Mathiak and Juan Jose Lopez in seat two. And what we're trying to do is ask some questions that are of specific interest to people who are concerned on advocating for the students and families in Madison's various minority communities. And we're both trying to emphasize some of the questions that are specific to those issues, but also get at some other general things. And toward that end, Laura,
well, we're going to be here for a while too. I just wanted to welcome people to come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
down to the senior center at 330 Mifflin Street, and join our audience. And we'd like to go into the audience this hour for some questions.
That's right. That's right. And we will be doing that in just a moment. Want to bring you into this if we could.
Oh, sure.
And I'm thinking perhaps this is a good time for question four, which
question
is kind of basic
four,
to things.
Right. Yeah. So how would you rate the leadership of Superintendent Art Rainwater so far? And would you support a yearly job performance evaluation based on goals that are set by the board? Embodied in this question is, what do you believe are the proper roles of the school board relative to school administration? So, again, we'll try to limit the questions to about 2 minutes or so. And I don't know, John, who do you want to go to on this?
Just to be totally arbitrary, let's start with Arlene, I guess. Arlene Silvera in seat one. Well, not that she's arbitrary.
Thanks, John.
All right.
Yeah. I think performance appraisals and reviews are necessary in any kind of situation, any kind of organization. I think it's very important that we set goals for the superintendent that tie in with the goals of the district. I think the goals, you've probably heard the term SMART goals. I think they have to be measurable, and I think they have to be realistic and attainable. But I think they have to tie in to the agreed upon vision of the district, and that is something that leads to the next part of the question, is in what is the role of the board. I think it's the role of the board to determine the vision of the district, to work with the community in getting feedback and input, coming back with the determining the vision, determining the overall standards, and then it's the administration who actually makes it work. They do the tactical day-to-day part of saying, okay, this is what we need to attain, this is what we want to be, this is how we are going to do it. I think I read an article that made it very simple when they said the school board does the what of the district. What you want the district to look like with working with the community, and the administration does the how. How are we going to get there? And then it comes back to the board again, because I think the board has to assure that the administration is doing the job, that programs are working or not working, and if not, we have to change them. So I think they have to ask for regular evaluations of programs, regular evaluations of teaching methods to ensure that we're keeping pace with the best methods out there and our programs are successful. Thank you.
Okay, again, that was Arlene Silvera in seat one, and now we'll hear from Maya Cole, also running in seat one.
Maya Cole.
I'm sorry, I misspoke, sorry.
That's okay. Do I think the superintendent should be reviewed? Of course. I wish that the current board would have put that on the agenda a lot sooner than letting him go a few years. I think that with the rapid growth of this district and the achievement gap and the competition that we have outside of the district with suburban school districts, that it's imperative that as board members we keep on top of this. So sometimes I get criticized for this, but because we're on radio, I can say it, that we need to hold the district accountable, and they have to be transparent, and we have to set goals. So how do we do that? Well, I apologize to anyone that doesn't have access to the Internet. One thing I've done in my school board campaign is make sure that I show you what my vision is, my exact vision is, on my website, which is www.votemaya.com. And you'll see a definite difference between the style of my opponent and myself, which is that I want to be a person of ideas. I put them out there. I research. And I want to engage the public. I think it's very important to do that. So that's my vision, which is that we need to get to a point in this district where we have both the superintendent accountable, but also the board. And one way to hold a board accountable is hold elections and then decide. And one thing that I would like to see differently on the board in regards to this is having committees that actually meet and having committees that are actually of great importance. Committees like performance and achievement, math and science, fine arts, racial equity. We don't have those right now.
Okay. Again, thank you. That was Maya Cole. Did I get it right this time?
Yes, you did.
I must have just slurred it last time. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I slurred my words. And this is she is a candidate for seat one, along with Arlene Silvera. Maya, you had a chance to get your website out there. Arlene, let's give you equal time for that. What is the website address for your campaign?
Thanks, John. www.arleneforschoolboard.com.
Okay. And let's go to seat two then. Juan Jose Lopez, and why don't we start with your website address?
It's www.lopez2006.com.
And actually, just to keep the flow going, in case anyone's taking note, Lucy Mathag, what's your website address?
www.votemathiak.com, votemathiak.com.
Again, we'll get all of these things up on all of these addresses up on the website for the mic, which is the mic, themic921.com. And Juan. And yeah, and of course, everyone is.
Can I give you my
your address?
Can we grade you on spelling?
Yeah, there you go. Juan Jose Lopez, your comments on this question.
One of the most important jobs or tasks of a school board is to evaluate the person that you hire and that you discipline and that you monitor and evaluate, which is the superintendent. Very, very important job. Let me tell you the politics, because again, everybody, it's perception and reality. People have been criticizing the board for not having evaluated. We finally did evaluate him this last year, and we put goals together. But remember that a person, just like the university president or MATC president, you have to develop a contract with that individual, and that has to be agreed upon by both the board and the superintendent. We did that. Number two, the leadership of Mrs. Carstensen, who's the current president of the board, because of so many differences, everybody said, well, I don't want to evaluate him. I don't want to do it this way. I don't want to do it that way. With the indifference going on, we finally went ahead and evaluated him. We evaluated him based on the goals that we have as a Board of Education, reading by the third grade, algebra by the 10th grade, attendance, and also his community participation and involvement. So we looked at that very, very carefully. And, yes, we got input from a variety of different groups, because a lot of us go with the superintendent or attend with the superintendent a variety of functions, meetings, and other important things that are important for his in executing his job. But let me tell you where it gets very cloudy is that when you don't like somebody or when you don't agree with him or her, then you're not evaluating them properly or evaluating that person properly. We need to separate that. Unfortunately, some board members can't separate that. And I understand, because I sit on other boards where I have not liked an individual or I have disagreed, and therefore I want to evaluate him or her based on that. Well, I'm going to evaluate the superintendent based on results, based on results. And it has to be agreed upon by both him and the board.
And if you could wrap up, please.
And the last thing is that what happens is that board members, just like in any nonprofit board, we try to micromanage versus setting the policy. You set the policy and you evaluate the individual.
Okay, Lucy Mathiak, also from C2, please. That was Juan Jose Lopez speaking just a moment ago.
I think this is an area where the incumbent and I disagree in the sense that this is, if I'm not mistaken, the first time the board has evaluated the superintendent in about 5 years. And I think that is an issue because it speaks to whether you believe the board should have some level of oversight or have a hands-off approach. And I think there's something in between micromanaging and hands-off that could be found if the board chose to do so. I also understand, and I may be wrong, and I'm sure somebody will correct me if I'm wrong about this, but if I'm not mistaken, the superintendent's contract places a few constraints on what he can be evaluated on, and that includes the specific goals that are set. So within those parameters, what I would like to see is a process that really does exactly what Mr. Lopez says, looks at progress towards goals, but uses things like neutral outside assessors to give us a good read on where things stand. Because right now, the information and the data that we're getting is coming exclusively from the district, and in fact, in most educational settings, at least the ones that are very sincere about wanting to do assessments, there is some measure of outside neutral review, so that it's not, the reviews are not being done by people with a vested interest in the outcomes. So I think we could do a lot better. And then finally, I really have to say that it is unfortunate that we're talking about whether or not this is, whether somebody likes the superintendent or not. As far as I can tell, the majority of the board is, and I'd have to say everybody on the board has some role. And I do believe that it is really unfair to take this one issue and place it as a personality clash issue. You've been openly critical of Ms. Robarts. I'm sure that's, you know, perhaps who you're talking about, or maybe Ms. Kubza. The fact is that they've participated in professional evaluations, and I trust them to be professionals on the board, as I hope everybody would be.
Okay. Again, that was Lucy Mathiak from C2. What in just a second, we're going to send Laura out into the audience, see if you all have some questions. But off of this last question, I think we're hitting on something here that's kind of fundamental to this race. And I think in the public's mind, and maybe folks who aren't political geeks like some of us in this room, they're trying to kind of figure out what all of this is about, where some of the disagreements are, how people find themselves aligned with one another in different camps, however you want to put it. This gets kind of confusing, and I want to come to a question that one of the folks at Communities United had phrased to kind of try to get at this. And basically, the thesis of the question is: the school board currently, in some cases, has a reputation for being fractious and at times divided. And at least in the opinion of the question writer, this has not always been in the interest of good public policy. Again, assuming that you agree with that statement, what do you believe are the sources of the discord or the disagreement, the division on the board? And how do these different philosophies on the board relate to issues affecting students from minority communities? And again, assuming that whatever this represents is something negative in terms of a lack of civility, a lack of ability to work with each other, how would you work to reverse this trend? Let's see. Let me start actually this time with Maya Cole from seat one.
Thanks, John.
I apologize. Before I do, just one other thing perhaps you can address, and we will give you a little bit longer to talk about this. Maybe you have 3 minutes on this one. The other thing too is that of the four of you sitting at the table, I think I know that you're combining efforts in some ways, Maya and Lucy, Arlene and Juan, and correct me if I'm wrong about that, but again, some of the reasons why you've aligned yourself with each other's candidates as well. So again, we're just trying to kind of understand. I think in the past, you know, it used to be pretty easy. There were the really conservative people and the really liberal people, and not a whole lot in between. So if you all can help us educate us on what some of these differences are. Thanks.
Can we have those as two separate questions, because I think they're not
sure.
They're really different questions.
Sure, and I'm sorry, you're wanting to differentiate between
how you would solve fractiousness on the board and why we've aligned the way we have.
Okay, I think I think it's a very helpful suggestion. So let's start with the fractiousness on the board, and what would you do to change that if you believe that that's a not a good dynamic. We'll start with Maya Cole from seat one, please.
Well, I think I originally got into the school board race. One of the reasons was that I did attend a lot of school board meetings, and it became pretty evident that it was like a boat without a rudder. There was a lot of pontificating, and I guess I feel very strongly that boards need to get the business done at hand. We have limited resources. We have limited time, and I think it's more efficient when you have an agenda and you stick to it and you have time limits. So one thing I would do is buy everybody a timer. And I'm serious, so that we can.
Laura, you doing anything on Monday nights?
yeah. Maybe Laura can come over, and she'll have to nudge a lot of people. I think it's helpful because we need to get to a point in this community where our school board makes sense to folks. I think that having board meetings that run 5 to 6 hours, whether you have the stamina to stay there or not, is not the issue. The issue is that we have parents that want to come to these board meetings. And when you put parent input, at one point they put it at the end of the meeting, you can't expect parents of young kids or other citizens to stay at a board meeting till 10:30 or so. The other thing that I think has happened is that as a voter, I think voters need to vote on the issues. And I think I've been very clear on what my issues are. I want a transparent budget. I want a budget that everyone understands. I don't think that that's that hard to achieve. It's achieved in other school districts. I want school board members to all go through some sort of training on how to be a good school board member. And if that sounds, you know, pie in the sky or too conservative, I say go look at the state of Minnesota where they actually mandate it to have every school board member in the state know about public financing, specifically school board budgets. Why do we need that? Because we need to have some sort of accountability and common sense on this school board. I also think that I have a perspective that a lot of people here don't have. I alluded to the zookeeping, and now I have zookeeping in a different way, which is that I have three young boys. I wake up in the morning, and I deal with conflict and strife on a daily basis. What I see on the school board is nothing compared to my daily life. I have worked actively in the community as an activist against concealed carry. I know what it's like to walk up to somebody that wants to carry a weapon and have a candid conversation with them. So I'm not afraid to have conflict or tension, and I think that that's what we're seeing right now is a board that doesn't want to have that, but it ends up coming out anyway.
Okay. Because these two issues, we want to separate them out, but they are kind of connected. Actually, Maya, I want to come back to you again, and we're going to ask them this way. And again, the second part of this being, in terms of the alignment of the candidacies, why are, in your case, you and Lucy aligned and working together? What are the commonalities that bind you?
And just for clarification here, John, is this a two-minute question or a three-minute question?
Let's make this one a two-minute question, if we could, please.
Well, I'm not going to speak for Lucy, but I will speak for myself. I want to make that clear. When I started on this journey, I talked to many teachers and principals and my kids and my husband, and I wanted to do something where I could dedicate a large majority of my time to the good of the community. I'm a community activist, and I'm a volunteer. I'm the worker bee, as they say. Why is this aligned like this? Simply because I got into a situation that I did not realize was such a hornet's nest. I actually chose two people. It was just a practical number to go talk to. I decided to that were on the school board. So I went to the person that I thought would be the least aligned with me, the person that would be the most contentious and disagree with me the most, and that was Ruth Robarts. And then I also went and talked to Lori Kubza, because she had been on the least amount of time, and I wanted to get a perspective of what could be the worst that could happen, and also can I affect change. And because I did that situation, because I went and did that, I became trying to think of the words. I've been told that I'm a conservative, that I don't care about kids. I think, you know, the easiest way to do this is to go and look at the MTI mail piece. Go look at the other side, at the personal attacks. Lucy and I are doing this for many reasons. We are working together because we want to work together with people.
And I apologize if you could just, we'll have another chance for you to elaborate, but we need to cut you off for now.
Sure.
Thank you. Arlene Silvera, again, we'll start with that kind of that first question about the notion that there may be some division on the board, and if you could characterize where you think the sources of that are, and then what you think some action might be to reverse that trend.
And just to make this formal, these are two minute questions,
right? In consistency, first part 3 minutes, second part 2 minutes. So, the second part, as you heard, was there you go, was also discuss again, you know, where you fit into if you do align yourself, say, with Juan's candidacy or the existing board members. So, but let's start with that first one, if we could. Are we confusing you totally?
No, I'm with you, John.
Okay, thanks, Arlene.
I have 5 minutes for this, right? No. Okay, yes, the board is fractious. You can look at the board meetings on TV, and you will see that. It's unfortunate, it's very sad, and it's not only hurting closing of the achievement gap, it's hurting all of the children in the Madison Metropolitan School District. Point blank, not good. I think many people on there are board members that have forgotten what I think the goal of the board is, and that is to think about the children and make decisions that benefit the district and the children. I think people are digging in their heels for their own political causes, and it isn't working. How can that be changed? Well, on a daily basis, I do project management at work, so I have a lot of project management skills. It means pulling together diverse groups of people. But I think we have to have, with some board members, a look-in-the-mirror type session. I've gone back and talked with a number of past board members who are very effective on the board. And, you know, the key things are respect. I think when you go to a board meeting, you have to have respect. The second thing is, when you go to a board meeting, I think your colleagues have to understand that you're coming in with an open mind. So if you come in thinking you're going to vote one way, other people can change your mind if they bring in information, data, whatever the case may be. I think it has to be cordial, and I think you have to try to keep the again, the children at the forefront of the decision-making. And there's a lot of, I won't get into project management skill type things, but there's a lot of ways to help do that, and that's something that I would be committed to attempting to do.
Okay, and I guess the second part again, and is there, in fact, do you see yourselves as allied in terms of running together? And
I'm an independent candidate.
Okay.
An independent person, contrary to what you'll hear, but no one here who calls me otherwise even knows how I would vote on any of the past issues, so they're just kind of little hearsay on the street. Yes, I am endorsed by 5 members of the board, and I'm very proud of it. Thank you. I've worked with them over the past years on referenda, on Leopold, on a number of things, and I've earned their respect. And I, again, am very proud of that. People call me status quo. Guess what? Go back and look at the voting records of the past 3 to 4 months. There is no consistency in the voting records. There is no status quo in how the board votes. I may vote with Lori Cubsa more than I would vote with Bill Keyes. Does that make me status quo or not? I still don't understand what the status quo is, because there is no status quo pattern. Juan and I are not doing joint campaigning together. I am supporting Juan because I believe in him. I believe that he has the best intentions for the children. I like his positive approach. We do have a good school district. We build from our strengths. I appreciate what he has done. He has been helpful to my family. He's been helpful to my schools, and that is why I am supporting him. Thank you.
Okay. Lucy Mathiak from C2. Do you need me to set it up again, or do you think?
No, I think I've got it 2-2, right?
Okay, yeah, you got it. Or 3-2, actually.
I may be over 50, but I've still got some memory left.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. The fractious behavior on the school board, I think, is something that I've been concerned about for some time, because I believe that, you know, it's interesting to be a parent of high school kids and middle school kids and watch behavior on the board that would not be acceptable in most of our classrooms. Similarly, there are behaviors that I don't have the luxury of doing in my place of employment because they would be considered to be verbally abusive. And, you know, it's the sort of thing that I don't have the luxury of doing. What I found in situations where there is what I believe to be verbal bullying is that it makes it very, very hard to stay focused on why you're there and what it is you're trying to achieve. So when we have a board where members feel pretty free to unleash on each other for longer than the people in the audience have to speak to the board, and the president of the board does not intervene or call the question or whatever might happen to restore some sense of order and decorum, I think that's a problem, and I think it speaks volumes to why you can have a 5-hour meeting with not a lot getting done. And by this, I mean, I know people are going to say, oh, this doesn't happen. Well, it does. And in fact, if you go back and you look at the newspapers from the last few years, you can find plenty of examples where it's been reported, including a 10-minute speech that Mr. Lopez unleashed on Ruth Robarts in September 2004, where he yelled at her for four for around 10 minutes, I believe, and was pounding his fist on the table and then yelled at somebody in the audience who was there videotaping it. That's not
you're
how you run a board meeting. That's
perhaps
not how you get stuff
you're
done.
You're running with the whole both questions, but anyway, we're about the three-minute mark now.
You needed to tell me a little bit before the two-minute mark.
There you go.
Okay, so I think that some leadership by example and some restoration of decorum would go a very long way towards getting the board productive again. Why am I cooperating with Maya Cole? It's really simple. We don't have MTI's endorsement. We don't have the South Central Federation of Labor sewn up. We need to work with volunteers as best we can, and if we can pool our efforts to go farther, I think that says a lot about our personalities and our willingness to cooperate to achieve our means. We may not always disagree. In fact, I think we disagree on some issues around discipline and police in the schools, but we're able to work together because we're independent thinkers who respect each other.
Okay. Thank you. Again, that was Lucy Mathiak from C2. Juan Jose Lopez, your thoughts on this?
First of all, I got to thank the three women for running as well, because it's important when you run with a fraternity of the school board. That's a very important role in this community. And people can criticize and be very candid about that Ms. Robarts or Kubza or Keys or Winston or Schwa, Vang or Lopez. But you know what? At the end of the day, we may not agree, but we respect the institution of the school board, and we respect each other even though we don't agree. Let's make that very clear. But what Lucy forgot to mention in all her comments here is that when she was on the committee with Ms. Robarts, she filed a complaint against me because I made a comment about Oliver Kiefer's father, who happens to be a staff person, and I was just joking. And she filed a complaint with our attorney. So she forgot to mention that when you're talking about decorum and getting along with each other, we are all elected individually. We're elected individually. And we all have our interest on the board. And yes, you know what? Eight to nine times out of ten, Ms. Kubza, Mr. Vang, Mr. Winston, Ms. Robarts, Ms. Karstensen, Mr. Keys, and I vote the same way. Okay? Do we approach it differently? Definitely. Do we agree or disagree? Of course we do. But the fractiousness that happens is that people want to gain control. You know what? I was president. I don't want to control anything anymore. I've been there and done that. I want to be on the school board because I want to put kids first and not talk about it because I act on it. There's a difference. I act on it. And it's very easy to say, I've gone to meetings, I've gone to events and so forth. Well, I've not only gone to events and meetings and so forth, I've acted on stuff that we've gotten results. On the second part of the question, you know what? Lucy supported me in the past. I know because I've talked to her at a number of different places. And you know what? I looked at Maya's record. A lot of guts for her to be able to say, I'm going against the gun ban, because I'm against it too, because it hurts kids. But during the long range planning meetings that we had, many, many meetings, I was very impressed with the involvement of Arlene Silvera. I'm not going to ever send out a flyer, say, you know, vote for Arlene and vote for me. Will I encourage people to vote for Arlene? Definitely. I respect her. I admire her for her work. But if Lucy was on the other, not running against me, maybe I'll do that as well. But I'm not here to say, vote for Juan Lopez and Maya Cole or Arlene Silvera or Lucy. Vote for Juan Lopez because I've proven what I can do as a school board member. And the fractiousness has to stop, because when we're trying to vie for control, you know, then you align yourself with groups that are totally, you know, all of us went, by the way, to MTI, to the South Central Federation of Labor. All of us went. We had an opportunity to answer all the questions, and then they made a determination. I have not always gotten their endorsement, and I have the other groups that I went to that I didn't get their endorsement, but then I didn't go and align myself with other groups that don't support public education. I'm a product of it, and I'm going to support groups that support public education.
Okay, again, that was Juan Lopez. I think in some form, before the debate is over, we'll have a chance to maybe come back to this. Again, you know, I still think it's a bit of a mystery for folks to understand this. It's more clear cut when you have a conservative liberal divide or other things. And so again, as we answer questions, the one part of this that again, keeping in mind the purpose of today's debate might be useful, is to the extent that you can answer it, again, differentiating yourself from your opponent on issues in terms of issues affecting minority students and families, and if it ties into this somehow, being able to talk about that. I think, again, that's of course the purpose of why we're here today, and we want to make sure we're answering questions to that. But maybe the best thing to do right now, a suitable cooling off period, although you're all been very civil and we appreciate that, is to, Laura, if you could take the microphone out into the audience, and we'll see if we have some comments and questions. Actually, and before we do that, actually, let me send you over to Barbara Golden, if I could. One of the things I did want to accomplish today, and had invited some people from different communities, is also to have this be, in some sense, a listening session for folks to have a few minutes to just sort of explain from the perspective of different ethnic minority communities some of the special challenges that they see and that they face. And, hey, as we lead into this, one thing, I just want to make a personal observation. Sometimes the role of truth speaker is not easy. And folks have alluded to that, that, for better or for worse, sometimes, people who are in the role as you're in, you know, end up, you know, being labeled an angry person or other things. And, I gotta tell you, my whole experience with you is not that. And the whole experience with what you're trying to accomplish on MAFAC is very constructive. And with that, Could you elaborate a little bit on some of the things that drive you and your organization and the things that you think need to change? And again, we'll give the panel a chance to respond after we've heard from a couple of citizens.
Well, thank you, John, for this opportunity to speak. And the first thing I'd like to say, this is Barbara Golden. I am the co-founder and currently co-chair with Tina Jenkins of MAFAC. And I'd like to say that although I didn't choose this role for myself, I'm not backing down from it. And also, although the title of angry has been put on me, I think that anyone who lives in this country, who is paying attention, who is not angry, is missing a lot of things. And so I pride myself on being a person who is very attentive to not just what is happening with students of color and their families, and not just with the educational system, but what is happening with our right to dissent in this country, and how those of us who are dissenters are often labeled as unpatriotic, un-American, and angry. And so I'm proud to be a member of that angry group of people who are standing up for American values. And I'm also standing up for the rights of African-American families and other students of color. And that's what MAFAC is founded on. I like to say that as a person who gets around the district, and not just as a parent, because I no longer have children who attend the public schools, but because I'm associated with research, grassroots research, grassroots activism, I hear from a lot of African-American parents and others that they are not happy with the status quo, and that some of us have gotten too complacent, that we think because people are not showing up at school board meetings, that because people are not showing up and speaking to members of the board or to the other staff or administration, that they are happy and content. I'm here to tell you that people are not happy. People, even when we say we close some of that achievement gap, it's still not good enough. It's like saying from people who have escaped from New Orleans that if you get a crummy apartment and a bad side of town, it's better than what you had. It may be better, but it's still not good enough. In this country, that's not how we measure what is good enough. We want for the least of us what is good enough for who we consider the best of us. And so I'm here to say that it's not good enough to say we have closed some of that gap. We need to have no gap at all. We need to say that every child in this district deserves what those who are from the upper middle class white families say that they deserve. We need to give that to every child.
Is there anybody else who has a question at this point? In the back of the room there, please. Why don't you, if you could come forward.
My name is David Mandier. Many of you know who I am. Maybe you run into me, and hopefully it's been cordial. But I'm right presently looking at a document from PMA Financial Network, Inc. It's entitled Financial Planning Program. And I have a couple of questions regarding this, which don't necessarily need to be answered, but how is it that they're doing it, and what's the cost? I mean, don't we have people in our schools? They delineate basically an estimated $8 million shortfall this year, If you go out the preceding year, 17, 22, 29, and 38 million out to 2011. This year we're going to make up that shortfall with approximately 90 cuts in the schools. About 50 of them are coming out of the classroom. If you interpolate out, you end up with around 100, 100, 200, and 250 for a total of approximately 650 teaching positions. As a teacher, how are we going to make those things up? We can't do it all by attrition, because when you have attrition, they never show up back in the classrooms. What are you guys going to do?
I'll tell you what. I do want a chance to comment on some of what Barbara has said, and we will come back throughout the course of the debate. They'll move to one of the questions that we came up with relative, I think, to the question from the audience, and that is to talk about budgetary priorities, class sizes. One of the other changes that is happening in a changing school district, of course, is also the need to build new schools in areas where there are more students, or perhaps to find other solutions. The need to potentially have students change schools because populations are changing, and yet not to segregate students. So now I managed to probably put about 2 or 3 questions out there, but let's start out with the current budget priorities as you see them, and ways that the school district is cutting back at a time of limited resources, and ways you do agree or disagree with what's happening right now. And let's start on this end of the table with Juan Jose Lopez in C2.
If I may, 2 or 3 minutes on this?
Let's go with 2 if we could, please.
Are those real minutes or?
They're as close to real minutes as I can make them.
I still have that time she took from me, right?
Oh.
A couple of seconds. Anyway, the budget situation is probably the most critical issue on the Board of Education and any school boards. And the financial situation for every school district, including the 424 in the state of Wisconsin, is a very difficult one. People, it's very clear, folks. Either we cut or we go out to referendum. Now, it's not that easy. But it's very clear. We make the cuts, and you have a second-rate or a second-class type of school system, or you go out to referendum, and hopefully the voters will support it. But with that said, everybody then decides to look at, well, where do we cut so we could be lean and mean? We've cut over $40 million in the school district. And who does that affect? It affects poor kids, it affects kids of color, or it affects some of our most vulnerable learners in the district. What I propose, and I've done so, I'm sorry, not propose, what I've worked on is lobbying the state legislature and lobbying the governor. Fortunately, the governor has reinstated some money that would have even cost us more than cutting the $8 million. Now, remember, it's $8 million per year. It's not only $5 million a year, it's $8 million a year, and in some cases, it may be $10 million. Now, people say, well, cut here or cut there. It's easy to say where to cut. It's very easy to say where to cut, but you know what? That's not going to solve the long-term crisis that we have in the district. What's going to do so, from my perspective, is making sure that we're as a united board in approaching the governor and the legislature and other entities to provide money. And by the way, we have a grant writer that raises $3 million for us a year, but that's one-time money. It's not long-term money, and it doesn't replace tax dollars. The priorities I have, I will continue to support social workers and psychologists. I've been the champion of that on the Board of Education. I will support ESL or ELL learners, which is very important, and I will support also reading programs and training for staff that's very critical to the success of our kids.
And that was Juan Jose Lopez. Now Lucy Mathiak, also running for C2.
Okay. I think I have a somewhat different approach, and I think it starts with a question relating to what Mr. Mandir said. Where was the Finance and Operation Committee and the board on this? Because as far as I can tell, there haven't been any meetings or discussions, and yet we seem to have some decisions on who's getting cut where. That's a problem for me. That's a huge problem. I work in a public educational institution where we have very active ongoing budget committees that look at every issue, including what areas do we keep strong? What areas do we protect? Because we've cut them in the past, and I have not seen that focus in that discussion. We also look at what issues or what assets and resources we can put on the table. For example, there have been proposals that have been dismissed by some of the current members of the board and the administration to look at divesting the Doyle Building as a possible way of putting some resources back. Now, people say that doesn't solve the gap. I, again, don't have the luxury of saying that in my job. What I have to do is say, we have X amount of gap. We know that we need to provide these services. So where are we going to get? If it means putting one teacher back, let's put the teacher back. If it means putting three teachers back, let's put the teachers back. If it means creating some level of property tax relief, then let's find that resource. But let's not say we can't do anything before we've even had that discussion. I'd like to see a lot more engagement. I've been at the budget hearings. I've heard some great suggestions by district staff about ways to make the district work a little bit better with the resources we have. It's not going to solve the gap. We still have to go to the legislature, but we don't get a pass on making decisions until that state revenue cap has been addressed.
Again, that was Lucy Mathiak from C2, and now we'll go to C1, Arlene Silvera.
Thanks again, John. Yes, the state funding system is broken. This is not a quick fix. This is a long-term fix. I do commit to working with the school board, with the organizations in the city, grassroots organizations, and other school districts to lobby the legislature to try to get that changed. Otherwise, all school districts in the state of Wisconsin are going to die. That's long-term. Issue at hand, the $8 million deficit. I don't know at this point what I would recommend cutting or not. I can say right now that I will try my best to keep as many cuts away from the classroom as possible. And I know that's getting more and more difficult every year, as your numbers indicated. And why I say I don't know is because I'm in the process of gathering enough information, I think, to make good decisions. Right now you hear a lot of people say, well, that department looks big, let's cut it. Or we don't need that over there, there must be too many of them, let's cut it. Well, I don't make decisions that way. I make decisions based upon functionality. What does that big department do, and how does that tie in with the goals of educating all of our children? All of those lots of people over there, what are they doing, and how does that tie in with the goals of educating all of our children? I've been meeting with a lot of people. I've been talking with a lot of people. I'm trying to put it all together in understanding the best programs and the best people that support our goals. And, again, that's supporting the district's goals in supporting providing equal access to educational opportunities to all of our children, and that's how I'll make my decisions.
All right. And Maya Cole from seat one, please.
I think the two things that I support above all are small class sizes in the early grades and also in-class instruction, the teachers that are on the ground that work every day with the kids. We need to also, as a board, go back to what our set of standards are and values that we've set. We've set the third grade reading, we've set algebra and geometry and attendance, but I think we can do better. I think my experience has been when I've gone throughout the city and talked to individuals that we just aren't using our resources enough. I go back to whether it's the Room Parent Program or it's parent empowerment groups. In St. Louis, they had a situation where they were under huge budget constraints, and a father got a software program together where everyone in the community would volunteer. And when you registered your child, it's called Johnny Appleseed. Please don't shake your head. It's kind of annoying. Thanks. It's called Johnny Appleseed. It won a lot of awards. And what it did was is it took parents, and when they would go to register, they would be engaged to volunteer. And it doesn't mean that you do the kind of volunteering that I do. It means that you commit to your child's education. And I think that this is one step in the right direction. Some of the suggestions that I've heard from MAFAC, where we have parent rooms, is another step in the right direction. And so the budget process for me needs to be transparent and clear, and we need to be having these committees meeting more often so that we can actually generate revenue in the district.
Okay. As we close out the hour, I want to try to take a stab at – oh, I'm sorry, we have a question? Laura, why don't you go ahead? Let's do that first.
Hello. I have both a statement and a question.
All right.
The first one, my name is Sal Carranza. I work for the University of Wisconsin System Administration, Office of Academic Affairs. I'm also president of Latinos United for Change and Advancement. My number one issue is Latino kids. The largest growing percentage of our population is Latino kids, is ELLs. My question is, what are you going to do to support the needs of our ELL kids? My statement. I have heard, like you said, there's two different, there's all of them, I mean, it's difficult to separate whether it's a conservative or a liberal. However, it's very simple to separate between two groups. Those who are talking, everything is about process, and those who are talking about kids. I think it's about the kids. It's not about the process. It's about making sure that our kids succeed, all of our kids, not just a few, all of them. I don't know Arlene very well. I like a lot of the statements that you have keep going on about being the kids, what is our focus. But I know Juan Jose. His life has been devoted to kids. His focus is kids. If you talk about community involvement, I was part of the community that put forward with Juan Jose the idea of the Nuestro Mundo Community School. Talk about the grassroots project. Talk about an effort that was a community effort. That was Juan Jose's, okay? And that was successful, and it's been extremely successful. So those are the things that I want to say. About the budget, I was part of the first group that did the $100 exercise.
Right.
It's extremely difficult to come up with what to cut and what not to cut.
I want to make sure that your question gets asked. Could you reiterate that?
My question is, what are you, each one of you, going to do to support our growing ELL population?
Okay, and we're down to about 5 minutes before the break, so we're going to have to keep it to about a minute, but we'll give you a chance to elaborate after the hour. Let's start with Juan, please. Juan Jose Lopez, C2.
Mr. Carranza, I will continue to support ELL programs, but two issues real quick, and then I want to tell you what I want to propose other than Nuestro Mundo. Two things. One, the state, with the categorical aids, it's called categorical aids, include special education and ESL programs, and that's destroyed public education because they're attacked. The reason I'm wearing this button is because of the legislation that's going on at the federal level and the state level against Latinos in this country, and that's wrong. And I will continue to support ESL programs, but also I want to transition kids out of ESL because our ESL kids are as smart, if not smarter, than everybody else. You know that our culture as well as I do, that if you look back at our history, we have discovered and done a lot of things. Number two, that I've challenged this superintendent, and again, people are questioning all this about ESL programs. There are people on radio stations criticizing ESL and Fund 80 and so forth and destroying it. And not you, Lucy. I'm not talking about you. Other people that are out there that are doing that, and that's wrong.
And then
the last thing I'll do is I want to expand it to maybe Chinese or Japanese because that's another language that's important in a global economy.
Lucy Mathiak.
I'm sorry.
Well, that emotion.
What a shock. I think this is an area where actually Mr. Lopez and I are in heated agreement because which is good, you know, a little dangerous, you know, especially if you're on this end of the table. but I think that, and I want to pick up on something that he said at the end of his statement because I think it is not just the Latino kids. I think it's we have growing numbers of students for whom English is a second language. And this is one of the areas that really concerns me with all of the way that we approach our budget every year, because when we start by, you know, that list of 90 positions, most of which are classroom or EAs, as I understand it, educational assistants, we're starting with the people who are fundamental to the academic success of the students you're talking about. And I have to say, it's not just the kids for whom English is a second language. We have plenty of kids for whom, you know, who are Hispanic, who are African American, who are Southeast Asian, who speak English fluently. That's not the issue.
I'm sorry, if you could wrap up.
But we need to have that full body of support, and it starts with engaging with all of the parents and with the communities and then providing.
Arlene Silvera, seat one.
Okay, yes, I agree with what both of them said, and now I'll add on. Maybe we can do this approach. And I'll add on to Lucy's last comment. I've been through two schools, Leopold and Cherokee, that have high Latino populations. And I think we've had some very successful programs because both schools have really go out of their way to make the effort to interact with the parents and to interact with the families and to bring them in part of the school, as part of the school. Communication in Spanish. Meetings that meet the schedules of a lot of the working parents. Daycare, child care at meetings so people can come. Providing dinner at meetings, people can come to the meetings. Getting headless or wireless translation sets so people can sit in the audience and aren't pushed off in the corner with someone translating to them in a very loud voice. One community, and that's the approach. And again, it's two schools, just the two I've been involved in, but it works. And I think we have to make a concerted effort to go out and reach out more to these people to pull the parents and the children more as part of the community.
And Maya Cole, seat one.
Well, this is going to be a hard one to convince anyone. I say that because I'd like to address the idea between process and kids. First of all, it's going to be hard for me to convince you, given that you have an Arlene Silvera button on, of whether I'm for kids, and I take offense to that. I'm a mom. Oh, there's groans in the audience.
We'll have a chance to clarify
get exciting.
That. Again, you've got about 45 seconds because we have to do this before the break, if you could.
Okay, so the reason why I focus on process is because as a school board member, you need to sit down and evaluate where we can save money. The state is not going to change for a long time, just as concealed carry is going to come up again year after year. What I would like to do is look at things like reading recovery and pair that with some of the research that that I've looked at about English language learners that deals with phonics and getting kids practicing reading and maybe devoting a certain amount of time to the schools. And what I would ask of you, sir, is that instead of discussing things like animals in the classroom, that we have people from the university that can serve on committees so that we can figure out how we do this the best way. And then how can we do it in the most monetary efficiency, because that's what we're left with. And to have the goals as being what kind of district do we want to have, and how can we pay for that?
Okay. You know, this is Forward Forum on the Mic 92.1. We're joined here at the Madison Senior Center at 330 West Mifflin Street by the four candidates for Madison School Board who are running in the April 4th election. We invite you to stop on by for this last hour and participate in our discussion. Just to give you a preview of some of the things we want to talk about next time, one of the things is how you would advocate for a student facing some form of racial discrimination in the schools, what you see your role is, and the whole issue of equity and using resources. And we'll evaluate, we'll elaborate on that in just a second. Again, this is Forward Forum here at Madison School Board. We'll be back in just a moment. And actually, we are back right now. If folks could get back into position, we'd appreciate it. Again, this is Forward Forum on the Mic 92.1. We are broadcasting a very special event today. This is a candidates forum for the Madison School Board. We're putting a specific emphasis on issues affecting students and families in Madison's minority communities. Again, we are back on the air. We wanted to note once again our thanks to 92.1, the Mic. The first 2 hours of this event we were able to broadcast with very limited commercial interruption, as you saw, and able to go into that. Well, realities are back, and in fact, in this hour, we do need to go to more of a conventional format, so we will be breaking it up. We'll have four segments this hour, which actually is maybe not a bad way, because we'll have a chance for a question or so each segment, and then a chance for some reflection during the commercial breaks here. But as we were going into the break, I was just introducing a couple of subjects that some of the folks involved with Communities United and MAFAC and some of the other groups that are advocating were interested in addressing. And again, this I think in some ways comes back to how you see your role as a school board member. But let me give you a case in hand, again, of the kind of things that you all, as incumbents, have already faced or as potential new members may face I had a discussion with a friend of mine, Peng He, who is the owner of Taste of Asia and a leader in the Hmong community, last night. And he had hoped to be here, but was detained at the last minute here. But one of the situations he wanted to bring up as kind of a prototypical situation is that he has a son who is about to become school age. And I'm sorry, I don't know the exact details, but someone in the district is insisting that this young man has to go through the English as a Second Language program. And what he is trying to explain is, you don't understand. It's not that English, in addition to Hmong, and I believe it's French or another language, it's not that these are secondary languages that my son has learned. My son was trilingual from an early age and is very, very articulate in speaking in English, and this is just kind of a non-issue. And yet there's this resistance. So as a case in mind, and I'm sure, you know, Barbara can also come up with other instances where someone has been put in a box or is facing racial harassment or other types of discrimination. What do you see it as your role if someone brings a case like this, and how would you use the system to address those concerns? Let's start with Maya Cole from Seat 1.
Thanks, John. I think
2 minutes, please, on these. Thanks.
I think my role in general, the kind of leader I want to be on the school board, is generally more proactive. I want to focus on that. I want to be the kind of school board member that goes out in the community and builds community. I have been involved with the Institutions for the Healing of Racism with Richard Davis, and he's a supporter of mine. And one thing I've learned from him is that this is not individual situations. This is pervasive, as Arlene had talked about, institutional racism. And it goes to sexism and all the other isms that we have in our society. It's something that you have to be willing to commit to for the long haul. And that's why I take Richard's classes, not just one session, but every session that I can. That said, I think that we have to...
In just a few seconds, if you could, and I'll stretch everybody else a little bit too here, but to answer that specific question again, do you see it as appropriate to your role, though, to advocate for an individual who faces racial harassment or some other form of something that needs a response, or is that someone else's role?
At this point in time, I don't know if we have anyone in place in the district that could do that, and I think that's something that we're missing. We need to have, I mean, we do have the gay, lesbian, bi, trans teacher. We do have interpreters, but we don't have someone that can, or a committee. I don't think it should be one person. It has to be a committee that gets together and looks at this, and at this point, I don't think we really have that.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. We'll go to about 2.5 minutes then for responses. Arlene Silver.
Thank you. When my daughter Carly started Leopold, I told you earlier, she's Hispanic, so it took about 2 months before we could get anything home in the mail that was written in English. put in the box. We checked the box. Put in the box. I understand the frustration sometimes working our way through the school district, you know, based upon what you fill out in a form or what the assumptions are made about your family lifestyle and the like, and it's not okay. As a school board member, I would advocate for all children, but if someone came up to me with a specific issue or a specific problem or a specific example, then I would certainly look into it and find out how to best address that and take it through the appropriate channels. And I'm not exactly sure what they would be. It would be depending upon the situation, but find out what's going on and find out how to correct it. I think even more importantly as a school board member is to advocate for the community partnerships, the relationships that address the anti-harassment, the anti-bullying in the schools. Middle school parent, I get it. It's very important for all aspects of life. I think it's very important that we support the Bonnie Augusta position. We have a resource position advocating for our American Indian students. I think we have to expand their reach. We have to support the programs like the GLSEN program that wants to do the anti-harassment training in the schools. We have to support the programs like the Wickety program that wants to bring, more self-pride to some of these African-American students. The African-American Ethnic Academy that wants to teach kids how to think through issues like a scientist. I think there's that is a bigger role in advocating across the district for respect irrespective of who you are.
Okay. And Lucy Mathiak from C2.
Well, I think, you know, again, I think I have a slightly different take on this, and it's quite simple. I think that we are in a period of transition socially, and I don't mean just the Madison School District. I mean as a society, where diversity is not something that happens outside of school or outside of our everyday practice. It has to be an inherent part of what happens every day in our schools, and that means we really need to change our culture as a school community. And that does not mean bringing in outside experts. The fact is that we didn't need John Singleton. There are parents and members of the community who could have told the district everything it needed to know about the treatment of students of color in the schools. They're often the last people who get listened to, if they're listened to at all. And I think that we have the tools and the expertise at our fingertips to really develop the systems, and it means making that a priority, not just with Performance and Achievement Committee, but with the school board. My issue with talking about live animals in the classroom is not that it was discussed. It's that if you weigh the amount of materials and time that have gone into that particular issue, which could have been a common sense solution, and the amount of time and materials that have come out related to minority student achievement and the comfort level of students in our schools, they don't match. We need to confront this issue. We need to take it on and wrestle with it and have some very uncomfortable conversations, whether it's the parents. Yes, and I apologize to my friends if I'm sort of telling your story on the air, but my friends whose child went to a special English class in kindergarten, and the mom was really excited because the child was precocious and could read, and it turned out that, well, the child is brown and her name is South Asian, and so they assumed that she couldn't speak English, and were sending her to ESL class. Or my friend who is now going to college but was told by her guidance counselor that you're not college material. We have to change how our schools and our school communities operate, and really the parents and the ESL teachers who are part of all of that need to be the leaders, because they're the ones that are in our front lines on it.
Okay. And Juan Jose Lopez, C2.
Thank you for the question. And let me tell you what we've done as a board and what I've done. And, you know, again, I helped start Communities United, Lucha, La Soup, and I know MAFAC exists, but a lot of our parents are not involved in those groups, are not involved in our PTOs or PTSOs. Unfortunately, they're not. So what, you know, and I'll use the Leopold one, but I've been to Glendale, I've been to Franklin, I've been to all the elementary schools and met with the ESL parents. And Schwa and I have gone and met with the Southeast Asian parents and also with the Hispanic parents and Latino parents to make sure then we bring the staff from ESL and we bring administrators and say, look, these are the concerns that they're talking about. We write them down and we change that culture. Not at a performance and achievement meeting, not at a community meeting, but with the parents, whether it's at the school, at a community center, and address those issues. I do them at church, at Holy Redeemer, where I'm part of the church. The mass that I go to, it's 150% Latino. I mean, we don't have any white people or any black people going to that church when I go to service, and we meet with them individually and collectively. And I bring the administrators, and we bring the teachers and so forth. When parents also need an advocate, and I take that role as an advocate, not because I'm only a policy maker or a policy setter, but I also work with trying to make sure that the atmosphere, the environment is welcoming, and that they don't stereotype. When I got to the school district in 1994, let me tell you, that was a common practice. Has it improved? Yes, but it's not where it needs to be, because we still need to educate. We still need to desensitize people that otherwise say, oh, you look brown or you look Asian, so therefore your language is not what it's supposed to be. Peng and I have talked about this, and Schwa, who's a board member, has talked about this. But we've taken it a step further by meeting with parents either at school or at community center or at church and addressing those concerns. And then when we set policy as a board, we take those things into account, because we're asking parents that may not be associated with all the groups that are important to the community as well, but are not connected.
All right. Thank you. That was Juan Jose Lopez, again, a candidate for C2. We're here at the Madison Senior Center with a very special edition of Forward Forum. As we mentioned, we've been privileged to be able to present most of this debate with limited commercial interruption, but we now are going to have a short break to hear from the folks who pay the bills overall. And welcome back to Forward Forum. We're live here at the Madison Senior Center. Can we have a little enthusiasm, some applause for everybody? Thanks, everybody, for making this possible. Again, we're speaking to the four candidates for two seats that are available on the Madison Metropolitan School Board, Maya Cole, Arlene Silvera from seat one, and Lucy Mathiak and Juan Jose Lopez from seat two. And we have a question from the audience. Again, someone who is very crucial in helping bring about this whole event, Ernestine Moss, who is the current chair of Communities United, among many other roles in the community. Ernestine, what's your comment or question?
Well, I have both a comment and a question. As a member of Communities United, who's I'm representing the League of Women Voters on that committee, and I'm the co-chair as well. Actually, I'm ascending to be the chair
That's right.
as of our next meeting on the first Monday at 12 to 1 o'clock at the MG&E building. So if anyone wants to join us, please do. And I guess that kind of lets you know I'm an inclusive type of person, trying to make sure that we all participate in our community, our society, to help make democracy work. So I just want to encourage each of you who are listening out there to make sure that you do come to the polls and vote, or go to the polls and vote on April 4th, because it's very critical for us to elect those people who represent us and our views, and work hard for our children and our schools. And over the years, I've known Juan Lopez, and this is not an endorsement for Juan Lopez by any means. It's just that we struggled together through the university here. And when my daughter graduated in 1996, Juan made me feel special, made me feel that my daughter was special. And I felt that for a little bit until he told me, well, Ernestine, you know, he gave my daughter a monetary gift when she graduated. So I thought she felt real, I felt she was very special until he told me, well, you know, I try to do this for every child of color who graduates from the from the Madison School District. So then I didn't think she was so special, but I thought. So, you know, that's just a little thing that I got from Juan Lopez, and I thought, I really admire him for that, to try to encourage each person, child of color, to feel like they're special by a gesture that he does. And I want to know, my question is, what specifically would you do to ensure that there is equity in the equity programs, and especially with that department that is responsible for administering equity and diversity in the school system? What would you do to ensure that there is an appropriate level of funding to ensure that they are able to carry out the programs that they are charged to do?
I want to piggyback on that question, something that came up as we were working through these questions, which is, I guess essentially putting your money where your mouth is kind of a choice. But I know this has come up in other forums. You know, there is a notion that perhaps one way to be fair is to take all the resources that the school has, which are increasingly limited, and divide them up completely equally among all students. But then, as we've heard, you know, throughout the morning, there are special challenges that come, especially with some of the children in our minority communities, in terms of discrimination, economic disadvantage, lack of multicultural awareness, other things that sometimes make it more difficult and present more challenges. And so perhaps there's an argument that just proportionate amounts of resources need to go to some students. So answering Ernestine's question about the importance of equity, could you also kind of phrase that? What do you think? Does every student have to have the same amount of resources, or with the challenges we're talking about, is it sometimes appropriate to put more resources into some students with greater challenges and needs? Arlene, if I could, I'm going to start with you, please. Arlene Silvera, seat one.
Thanks.
And we'll try for about 2 minutes. Good, please. Okay.
Right now, equity is a very big topic in the district, and rightly so. There's schools that have much greater needs with respect to low-income students of need, students of color, and we have to make sure as a district that we're addressing the needs. However, you have to be very careful when you talk about the equity and the equity formula, because you have to, I think as a school board or as a school district, we're responsible for ensuring that all of our children are challenged and have their needs met. And so it's very tricky. There is an equity task force that has been formed to look at this issue. And I think it's a good first step to looking at school performance, needs of children, and how monies and resources are currently allocated on an ever-diminishing smaller pot. I think once we get recommendations from the Equity Task Force, then we have to go out and ensure that their recommendations, I think we have to test drive them, if you will, with the larger community and a lot of the community organizations to make sure that some of the assumptions that are going into this are correct. Again, I think many times when we make our decisions based upon just public input from a small group of people, and we have to ensure, especially with the equity formula, that we are listening to everyone and that we are, I'm philosophically very much a big advocate of providing resources where the resources are needed, but I don't think we can do it at the expense of other children. And I know that's kind of a broad brushed answer with not specifics, but until I think we come back and see what this equity task force is recommending and what it would mean for everyone, it's hard to get into the specifics of numbers or dollars or the like.
Okay, Maya Cole, also seat one.
Excuse me there. I think I'd like to piggyback on what Arlene said and say that I would like to see this equity task force expanded. I think that it hasn't, in my perception and talking to individuals in the district that work on issues of equity and race, we haven't really reached out and expanded it or engaged other members of the community, leaders that have been around for quite a while. I think it would help us. It might save a few steps if, in addition to the community members that we have on there now, that we couple them with current people that are working at the university on these issues and broaden this task force. I also think that we should push some of our task forces and committees to meet more frequently. And I see that that also shows the community that we have made that a priority by meeting more frequently. How to assure that those particular committees, you know, get equity, that everything is treated that way. I think that one thing is that we need to be looking at how other districts do this. I was speaking to someone earlier about other school districts that have come up against issues with school funding specifically. I think there's things we can do. I think we need to look at the amount of suspensions in the district and see if we can work with the Madison Police Department to come up.
Wind up, please.
Oh,
right.
Thanks.
No, okay, thanks.
I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, thank you. Juan Jose Lopez, C2.
As was mentioned earlier, we do have an equity task force right now. Equity is a very funny issue in the sense that it depends how you define what equity means, and that's what we're struggling with. Do we want to, and do we move resources where the need is the highest? We definitely do. However, remember that we have to try to balance that, because we also have a lot of middle-income children that attend our school district that also need resources to be sure that they are achieving at the level that their parents expect them and our teachers expect them to do. So you have a catch-22 at times, because if you put too much resources where it's needed the most, well, then parents will email us or call us or tell us, you know what, you're not paying attention to my child. What about my child? So we have to try to balance it. How you define it is very critical. Now, it's also, remember that equity is also driven by the budget, and it's also driven by the enrollment of students in the school, because that's how we base the amount of money that we get from the state dollars, as well as from our taxpayers in this community. So I'm looking forward to getting the recommendations, but then the other aspect is that all of us seven board members will have to then how we define, how we interpret those recommendations and how we define and interpret equity for our schools. I would tell you that the entire board strongly believes in making sure that we provide equitable resources to some of our most neediest or vulnerable kids. You know, there's 389 special education kids that have 100% funding, meaning it's costly. We have 109 of those students. We have 109 of those students in the Madison School District.
And Lucy Mathiak, also from C2.
Well, it's an interesting question because it takes me back to the Northside Planning Council forum last spring before the referendum, where the members of the board were asked, do you support the equity formula? And it wasn't a qualified answer. You could answer yes or you could answer no. There was not even a maybe as a possibility. And as I recall, very few members of the current board said, yes, they support the equity formula that allocates resources to the areas of greatest need, meaning schools with the largest numbers of low-income students. I think that it is one of the pivotal questions of the district, because as we've been going through these boundary changes, we've had a lot of discussion about busing kids so that we balance out low income and so forth and so on. And I think one of the members of the East Side Task Force finally said, where does that get us? Why don't we just create high quality, you know, instead of focusing so much on moving kids around, why don't we move the resources so that we have kids who are getting what they need in their schools? One of the things that I've found interesting in the last few months is that I had an opportunity to interview a legislator from Milwaukee who represents a very poor district. And in talking with her, I spent some time looking at the Milwaukee Public School website. And, you know, in Madison, there's this, well, at least we're not Milwaukee. I actually think we ought to all take a look at what Milwaukee's doing, because we could actually, I think they've outpaced us. And by that I mean they have schools that are with substantial numbers of low-income kids that are achieving. They have schools, and I'm not talking about the choice schools, I'm talking about public schools that have large numbers of low-income kids and are achieving. They have standards at K2, 3, 5, 6, 8, and high school levels across the board. What bothers me most about the issue of we can't take things away from the schools because parents may call and complain is that the parents who most need to call and complain are the ones who need the resources, and they're the ones who don't have access to the board right now.
And that was Lucy Mathiak running for C2. We're up against another break. When we come back in just a moment, we'll be out in the studio audience again, and then in our last segment, we'll give you all a chance with some closing statements. This is John Quinlan, co-host Laura Goodconnect here on the Mic 92.1. We'll be back with Forward Forum in just a moment.
Parkersburg, Colorado, Ellensburg, Rexburg, Vicksburg, Eldorado, Larimore, Atmore, Havistaw, Chattanooga, Chaska, Nebraska, Alaska, Opelika, Baraboo, Waterloo, Kalamazoo, Kansas City, Sioux City, Cedar City, Dodge City, what a pity. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
DineMadison.com, a $50 gift certificate for just $25 every Thursday starting at 7 a.m. This Thursday, get a $50 gift certificate to Red Robin Gourmet Burgers, but only pay $25 at DineMadison.com. Red Robin, with over 22 mouth-watering gourmet burgers, like the Bonsai Burger with grilled pineapple rings, or the Pot Roast Burger. Remember the American classics like the Red Robin Gourmet Cheeseburger or the Sauteed Mushroom Burger. Add some flair to your fare with specialty drinks, like an Ultimate Margarita, Franco Lemonade, or Monster Malt. Get a $50 gift certificate, but only pay $25 Thursdays at DineMadison.com.
It's the Pro Show. On Friday's show, we learned from local activists Bob and Bonnie Block that Iranians and Americans have a lot more in common than we do different. The Block's trip to Iran revealed that people want peace while our leaders rattle sabers. On Monday's Pro Show, Paul Sogman will be along to expose excessive Republican hypocrisy, and the leader of Madison's cat rescue movement, Ted O'Donnell, will provide answers for animal rescue and our evolution to no-kill solutions.
The Pro Show with Lee Rayburn and Jim Dick. Mornings at 6 on Madison's Progressive Talk. The Mic 92.1.
Middleton Power Center is blowing out new 2005 John Deere lawn tractors. In fact, you can save over $2,000 on some models, and most even offer 6 months same-as-cash financing. Be ready for spring and save big right now. Middleton Power Center, Parmenter Street, Middleton. Some restrictions apply.
We've got the power you need to get the job done. Middleton Power Center.
Open the door of Bernie's Rock Shop and discover a rare gem in the heart of Madison.
A wall of colorful gemstones and pearl beads astounds you.
Cases overflow with dazzling gems from around the world. Stunning silver and gold jewelry crafted by Bernie's metalsmiths impress you with exceptional quality and affordable prices.
Bernie's Rock Shop, a jewelry lover's haven, rock hound's heaven, and beater's paradise. Family owned and operated for 43 years, corner of East Johnson and Patterson.
Visit Bernie's Design Annex, featuring one-of-a-kind custom jewelry, now open next door.
Inclusion, diversity, progressive values. This is Forward Forum on Madison's Progressive Talk. The mic, 92.1.
Welcome back to Forward Forum. I'm John Quinlan. Hey, welcome. Thanks for everybody who's participating. Even with the time that we've had today, we're coming down to the wire. And what we'd like to do in this segment is we have several questions remaining in the audience. We'd like the candidates, if you could, maybe just to jot down some notes and to try to incorporate an answer to some of the questions into your final remarks, which we'll give you a chance to do in our last segment. Laura, if we could just get those questions out there, please. Actually, could you just come forward? I'm sorry, we're having some technical problems here. There we go. And you're Barbara Katz?
Yes, thank you. I'm Barbara Katz. I'm a parent of three boys in the Madison Metropolitan School District, a junior at West and two boys at Cherokee. And my question's about curriculum. There's been a lot of conversations about heterogeneous curriculum versus homogeneous curriculum. And for people that need clarification, heterogeneous curriculum is when ability groups are mixed in classrooms and it's taught in a differentiated, inclusive manner. Homogeneous curriculum, as I understand it, is very closely aligned with ability tracking. What I'm curious about is how the candidates, what the candidates think that how curriculum should be, should move forward in the district to meet the needs of kids adequately.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. And did you have a question? And again, what we'll do is we'll ask these questions and give you a chance to answer in your final remarks.
Good morning. My name is Joan Knabel, and the first thing I want to say is thank you, all of you, for running. I appreciate your civic responsibility here. My question dovetails with Barbara's, and that has to do with the accessibility of parents to get these questions before the school board. I think someone earlier said, what do you mean by status quo? And the status quo, from my perspective, is can people in the community who care about an issue like heterogeneity get that in front of the school board? And the way it's currently comprised, the answer is no. The Performance and Achievement Committee isn't meeting, and the president of the school board who controls the agenda doesn't let it come on. And that's not the only issue, is heterogeneity issues, contract issues with the teachers union, and so on. It has to do with the public's ability to get an issue out there. Whatever your opinion is on the answer to that subject, it is whether or not we can have an open discussion. And the reason I think it's important to back Maya and Lucy is because I think they would represent an opportunity for individuals in the community to be able to step forward and get their issues at least on the agenda, whatever the outcome. Thank you.
Okay. And Laura, we have one last question, I think.
I just have a budget concern. Several years ago, I sat with a building custodian who said, "This is the building services budget. I'd love to publish it in the newspaper, but I'd lose my job." He said, "Here is $25,000 to wire the Doyle building. We could have wired the city of Madison for that. Here is $20,000 for a concrete reinforced school. It should have cost two. Here are 25 laser printers, you know, each of us on our own pays much less, and yet they bought 25. That year I talked to the school nurse who said the price paid for Band-Aids, if she had gone to buy individual boxes at the most expensive grocery store, you know, was much more and no better quality. So I was wondering, could that budget be open to public scrutiny so we really know what we should be paying and so that we're not constantly cutting the arts and sports, and making those opportunities only accessible on the private level. And also, real quick, last year we heard the CEO of WEA Insurance, and he said very shortly the average price for a teacher's family's health insurance would be equal to her salary. And, I mean, we all know we need national health care, but in short of that, he suggested that if, as a state, we could bill centrally, purchase pharmaceuticals centrally, we could save millions of dollars.
And so we've got budget issues. Part three is budget accountability. And Ernestine, could you have a very quick question, if you could?
Very quick question. I think that language sets African-American and the Hispanic populations apart, and especially in school. Or school could be one place that we could actually start making some inroads. What would you do to encourage that interaction? And would you see that starting the second language for African Americans, perhaps, to learn Spanish, how would you facilitate that?
So we've got the intellectual equivalent here of a ropes course to finish you all off. We'll see how you do. We're going to be back with Forward Forum with some closing remarks in just a moment. And welcome back to Forward Forum. We do want to let anyone know, if you would like to, if you missed part of this and would, or would like to let somebody else know about it, please come to our website at themike921.com, and we will have this available for people to listen to in streaming audio form between now and the April 4th election. We had a flurry of questions before, again, and we're joking. Please do your best, perhaps, to address some of the issues. But this is your chance to summarize your feelings on this issue. Again, particularly emphasizing the concerns of students and families in Madison's minority communities. We'll give you each about 3 minutes for some closing statements, and starting with Maya Cole, seat one.
Thank you, John. I encourage everyone to go to my website. I think it can expand on more of my ideas than the 3 minutes allotted. But I just wanted to say that I think that Madison does have great public schools. I call them my islands of excellence. There's areas where I talk to principals and teachers and look at classrooms, and some things we're doing really, really well. But I think we need to expand them. And what I would like to see is that we embrace education in a different way and look at as communities of learning. That said, I think that we need to have board members that will question, challenge, push the administration, the district, to look at results and not just programs. That means that we go to the citizens and we say, okay, we have this equity committee, let's expand it, let's push it, let's set high standards, rigorous curriculum. And I say that we do this because when it comes to things that I'm running for, one is science and math curriculum that we have a standing committee. These are not just issues in talented and gifted science and math that are just for the elite students. These are for all students. This is a civil rights issue that we train kids to get to a point where they can serve in society. Heterogeneous and homogeneous classrooms. This is another issue where the district has just gone ahead and embraced a program without talking to teachers or community members or experts on the university level. And they raise the issue that, oh, well, we got to mix these kids up. We have to not do tracking. I say, why don't we have committees that can talk about this? That's what I want to do. Because there are resources available. Southern Poverty Law Center has a huge program where you can, it's called Mix It Up, where you get kids involved with each other on a regular basis. We have the fine arts, we have music, we have lunch. And these tend to be the areas where we cut. And so then we're left with heterogeneous classrooms that we don't have the resources to train these teachers at the level that they're expected to be trained, to take a kid that can't read and a kid that is reading at a ninth grade level and put them together and expect a teacher to do not only that but classroom management. And I say what we need is more community involvement, more neighborhood schools, and that gets down to boundary issues and budget. We need to start looking at our schools as centers of community, areas where we can serve both the elderly, community and social groups, and education, instead of bricks and mortar where we send our kids and then have them leave. I want them to be dynamic and embrace this population and provide for these families. We have made no efforts.
If you could wind up, please.
Sure. We haven't made many efforts with this district to partner with local health insurance groups, the different hospitals, to actually provide health care in some of our schools, and I want to see more of that done.
Maya Cole, seat one, thank you very much. Arlene Silvera, seat one.
Thanks, John. I will answer the questions that were asked. The first one was homogeneous versus heterogeneous classes. I'm a proponent, as I've said throughout the campaign, of heterogeneous classes. I believe that the classroom is a microcosm of the real world, and I embrace the diversity. I also know that children learn from each other, and if we are truly going to challenge all of our children to reach their potential, then I believe the heterogeneous classroom is a way to do it. As I said earlier, 0.9% of African-American students or in advanced placement classes. We've got to find a way to pull all of our kids together and challenge everyone. With that said, yes, teaching and learning is very critical. Teachers have to know how to teach the differentiated curriculum, and you do need the resources in the classroom to support the teachers and to support the learning styles of different children. Philosophically, I think it's important, and when you look at inclusion, that's why a lot of school districts come to Madison to learn from us. Very important to me. Issues in front of the school board. I think it's critical to have a dialogue with the community. Our job as school board members are to represent the community, and that is something that I would advocate discussion. I think that's the only way that you learn what's happening out there, what people feel. I don't think we need consensus. I think actually by hearing differences of opinion, you move forward. And I think we have to be open-minded. I think we have to be respectful by what everyone feels and what their opinion is on different school issues, and I think that's very critical. The budget. I think it's very important for the budget, for people to understand the budget. And I am an advocate of ensuring that when we look for budget cuts, that we do look at other areas, be it some of the supply areas and some of the things that you did mention in your question. I don't think that as a district we have to report out, you know, the cost of every Band-Aid or every small thing to the public, but I think we have to build the trust with the public so that they understand that we are instructing the district to look at all areas for cuts before they hit the classroom. And the final one maybe goes back to answer your question. Maybe that's where the heterogeneous classrooms really come into play. I think by having different students of different experiences together, then you learn to share and you learn from each other. And to me, that's very critical.
See two.
Okay, I'm going to start with the issue of the question about the budget and building services, because I think this is an area where, in fact, district staff have come before the board to offer ways and alternatives to do things in ways that would preserve parts of the budget for staffing. Many citizens, including myself, have made recommendations over the years and haven't gotten very far, but I think it's an issue that is of concern, in part because, you know, if you grew up with Bill Proxmire and the Golden Fleece Awards, then, you know, you start thinking about $600 toilet seats and other sorts of things. And the fact is, there are areas where the costs don't really match what we would expect to see for results. I want to talk next about the heterogeneous grouping, because I find it unfortunate that this is always pitched as either you have heterogeneous grouping or you have this rigid tracking system. And I think that the solutions fall somewhere in between. We've heard some interesting discussions about heterogeneous groupings, but my reservations are that the models that were presented to the board, and there wasn't much follow-up on this, are models that really resemble charter schools, where you have a very explicit set of conditions and class sizes and control over who enrolls and the requirements of parents and so forth and so on, plus full staffing. And when I talk to people who are in the schools and people who support heterogeneous grouping, they have said to me that they assume that generous instepping for high ability students is part of that. That I have not heard discussed by the board. They also acknowledge that you really need a full range of the support staff that we've been taking out of the schools. So if we can find a way to put the support staff back and have instepping, so that high ability kids who the teacher is never going to get to can move to the next level and they're not held back, then I'm much more open to it. My concerns are right now with the current structure. It we need to do some work before we have a successful model, and I want a successful model. I'd say the same thing for my nephew who had Down syndrome. He needed speech therapy. He would need to have I want to make sure that those needs are met, too. So that's sort of my and I see that I'm getting the finger, as it were.
No. You actually have about 45 seconds. Go ahead.
And so I think, you know, this has been a good discussion, and remind people that this is about democracy. It is about dissent. It is about questioning and asking for more information. And on April 4th, everybody going out and voting based on what you believe is going to best serve your children and the district and your neighbor's children. Thank you.
Okay. And Juan Jose Lopez, C2.
First of all, I want to thank you, John, and also Laura, and I want to thank the Mike 92.1, and also, of course, my three other colleagues here that have decided to take on a very important role on the school board, and I wish them all the best on April the 4th, but of course I hope you vote for me. Some of the issues that we talked about, and let me tell you, Madison and Milwaukee are segregated, folks, and I don't want to segregate our classrooms either. And that's what's happening. And, again, the discussion I've had on heterogeneous and homogeneous has been with children, not with adults, because, remember, I know that adults know what they want for their children. But I've talked to children, and I've talked to my nieces and nephews, and we have different learning styles and different learning abilities and so forth. And, you know, when my sister and my brother sit the kids down at the kitchen table, they don't segregate them by what they eat. They don't segregate them and put them in another room because you're a slow learner or because you're a high achiever. They sit them at the same table. And again, I ran Project Opportunity for 7 years here in this community, and I learned what the segregation and the outright, in my opinion, the outright discrimination that was going on with some of our children in the Madison schools. When I got on the school board, that was one of the challenges that I talked about. We've had that discussion on heterogeneous and homogeneous for a long time. But there's a difference right now because it becomes a politically charged issue. And therefore, you're not listening to me, you're not involving me, you're not engaging me. The board president has put it on the agenda, and we're not done discussing it. And it's been discussing the performance and achievement, and we need to bring experts on both sides. We have brought experts, and we need to bring them on both sides. And then the board sets a policy, and then the entire district moves forward with it. The budget process, you're absolutely right. We do need to cut in some of the areas that we cut, but it's not going to solve our $8 million crisis that we have. And this is not just Madison, Wisconsin that we have those issues. It's Middleton, Wisconsin. It's Monona Grove. I was in the swimming pool this morning with a board member from Monona Grove High School. We're talking about Monona Cross Plains issues. Those are issues of budgetary issues that are very important. Are we engaging the public? Do we have to engage the disenfranchised, the disconnected? Yes. And some of us do that. Not all of us do. Not everybody reads email. Not everybody has blogs. Not everybody has it. The families that I talk to at church on Sunday don't know what a blog is. But that's what people depend on communicating. Well, not me. I'm going to communicate with you one-on-one. And then the last issue that I'll talk about, I appreciate and respect that everybody's running, but my commitment, my leadership, and my anti-status quo is what I'm going to continue if you and trust me for another 3 years. I love being on the school board. I appreciate everybody that serves on the school board, whether I agree or not. But my commitment will not be wavered, and I will put children first. And I'm not just going to talk that. I'm going to do that. And those of you that have not been with me, come with me to Allied Drive. Come with me with my church tomorrow. Come with me to some of the other classes and programs that I go to where we're actually making a difference with children. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, we actually have about a minute left, and with that in mind, and despite the limitations of the Internet, actually, I want to just go down the line, and if you could each give your website or other ways that people could find out more. Juan Jose Lopez, C2?
Yeah, my website, I said it wrong earlier, .com. I apologize. It's www.lopez2006.org, or you can also email me. At votelopez@aol.com. Votelopez@aol.com.
Lucy Mathiak, also C2.
Okay, I'm going to do something really radical. I'm going to give you my phone number, 255-0939. I'm happy to talk to anybody. I do have teenagers who do a mixed job of taking messages, so if you don't succeed, try again. My website is www.votemathiak.com.
Arlene Silvera, seat 1.
www.arlenforschoolboard.com if you'd like to email. I'll spell it arlenesilv@aol.com, or you can call me 516-8981. Thank you all.
And Maya Cole, seat one.
My website is www.votemaya.com, and you can also reach me by phone at 259-0549.
Thanks to all four candidates for joining us today. Thank you for Communities United, MAFAC, and everything else. A very